me great pleasure to call together the City Commission meeting of March 28, 2016 to order. I would ask, if you haven't done so already, please silence your cell phones. And we're going to start with an invocation by City Manager Randy Knight. If you'd remain standing, we'll do the Pledge of Allegiance right afterwards. Thank you.
Pray with me. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day, and Lord, we thank you for this community and this country that we can elect our leaders, and Lord, that we're free to assemble and do the work of this community. And Lord, we just thank you for these that have chosen to give of their time to serve this community. And we just ask that you bless them this year and all the meetings, all the things that they have to do, all the deliberations. And we just pray, Father, for your guidance. Lord, we just thank you and praise you in your name. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. We have great honor to do a few oaths today. Commissioner Cooper will be being sworn in by Thad Seymour. And Nick Cooper will also be joining. Please.
I'm going to stand on the stairs.
I am so honored to have this responsibility. In my long life, I've had the privilege of commencements and many other ceremonies, but this is the first time I've ever been able and honored to administer an oath of office, and I can't imagine a friend I care about more or a person who serves us better. Would you repeat after me, please? I, Carolyn Cooper.
I, Carolyn Cooper.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support, protect, and defend.
That I will support, protect, and defend.
The Constitution and government of the United States.
The Constitution and government of the United States.
And the state of Florida.
And the state of Florida.
That I am duly qualified to hold office under the Constitution of the state.
That I am duly authorized to hold office under the Constitution of the state.
And that I will well and faithfully perform the duties of commissioner.
And that I will well and faithfully perform the duties of commissioner.
For the city of Winter Park.
For the city of Winter Park.
Of which I am now about to enter.
Of which I am now about to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God.
You are now inducted.
Thank you both very much. This is an incredible honor. I am very much indebted to all of you who worked so hard to ensure that you would continue to have my voice on the commission. And for that, I am eternally grateful. I could be no more proud than I am to represent all of you. I have watched your passion, I have watched your love for the city. I know that you want nothing more than for us to grow in a way that continues to ensure that we are a community of distinction, a community of fellowship. And you can count on me. I will do my very best. Thank you.
Now we have new Commissioner Pete Weldon, who will be sworn in today by Acacia Baker. Acacia, there she is.
I would like to introduce you to Acacia Baker. Ms. Baker is a political science student at Valencia who I met during the Christmas break. She followed up a week or two later and asked if she could volunteer for the campaign. She did 3 days a week. She was busy. She was learning everything about politics. She was fulfilling part of her ambition to understand what her major was all about. She did a great job. She learned the campaign software. She called voters. She walked streets. And net, she was a positive force for a successful campaign. When I asked my wife, Fran, to swear me in, she immediately said, no, Acacia should do it. I immediately thought that was a great idea, not only in recognition of Acacia's contributions, but also as a symbol of the responsibility of the City Commission to consider each generation in our deliberations. So, Acacia? I, Pete Weldon, do solemnly swear
that I will support, protect, and defend the
Constitution and government of the United States
and the state of Florida,
and the state of Florida,
that I am duly qualified to hold office under the Constitution of the state,
that I will faithfully perform
the duties of commissioner of the city of Winter Park. Of
which I am now about to enter.
So help me God.
I have two brief comments I'd like to make as your new commissioner. My first comment is to thank Tom McMacken for his many years of volunteer service to both the city and the residents of Winter Park. I look forward to his continued participation in our community. Tom has my respect and my admiration. He is a class act who has served us all well. My second act as your commissioner is to instruct the city manager not to pay the monthly amount due me as a commissioner, but instead to donate my annual salary to the following organizations in equal proportion: Mead Botanical Gardens, Inc. for general uses, Winter Park Library Association for general uses, and the Alvin Polisek Foundation, directed for the maintenance of the Kagan House. Thank you very much, and I look forward to my service on the commission.
Folks, any changes to the agenda? No, Randy, no? Okay, seeing that, I'll look for a motion to approve.
I move.
Second.
Great. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Excellent. Thank you. Mayor's report. Corey, I saw you come in. Corey, would you join me down at the podium? And folks, if you all want to clear out, if you just came for the swearing in, please feel free. Don't stand on ceremony. I have one last way that we trickle the whole way. Before I go into what's on the agenda, I just spoke to Corey Stevenson a bit ago, and Corey is here. Many of you know, we've talked about John Michael before at this commission level, and Corey was involved in a fundraiser this coming Saturday or the following Saturday? This coming Wednesday, I apologize. So I just thought I'd offer her the opportunity to speak about that, if you would give her your attention for just a couple moments.
Thank you so much.
Certainly.
I apologize for being so dressed down, but my John Michael shirt doesn't go with anything dressed up. Thank you so much, Mayor Leary, and congratulations to everyone. I think you'll serve your community very proud. My daughter, Autumn, is a senior at Circle Christian School, which is based in Winter Park, and she sends a huge thank you as well. She just got home from a mission trip to Brazil Saturday night. Otherwise, she would be here, but she's at home sleeping and exhausted. She and her classmates were charged with creating a fundraiser for Holocaust project, and they could have chosen anything. Most of the things turned out to be bake sales, and which is great. They've done a lot of good, but Autumn has been so deeply touched by what's happened to John Michael and the whole community, everybody around the world even. So she talked to her classmates about it, and her other teachers spoke about Valerie Green from the Bee Center, which is in Winter Park, and stroke recovery. And she put two and two together, the two organizations, to help not only John Michael, but other stroke survivors in the Winter Park area and the greater community and really around the world. And so they came up with a plan very quickly to have a fundraiser silent auction raffle, and it's going to be at the Winter Park Rapid Club this Wednesday night. We're with members, and they've gotten a lot of amazing things from floor seats at the Magic behind the Players for this Sunday night, to the scenic boat tour, a private boat tour for an hour for 18, to the science wine. I got that one for her. I didn't think she should do that. And so what we really need is just for people to show up. It's going to be really incredible, and John Michael, to have him continue to be supported, because his medical bills are astronomical, but also stroke survivors, just to have them continue to have support. I know you all did something with the World Stroke Day, October 29th, I think it went across the first time, so you saw a bunch of yellow ribbons around. That was through the Bee Center. So I think that having those two together and then having just supporting kids who want to help your community, I think is really important, so that as they become adults, they know that the community will always support them. So if you have one coming out, it was Wednesday night at the Rec Club, it's from 7 to 8:30, and we're going to have treats and some appetizers, and it'll be a wonderful time. So thank you so much. I appreciate it. No door charge. Everything's free. My husband and I are providing most of it.
And so. Silent auction.
Great. So, and lots of good music too. Thank you.
Trey, would you join me up here? Folks, we have a nice award that was coming our way today from the Florida Forest Service, but the Dana Seussman, who is going to deliver that to us, has had a flat tire. So we're going to put that on hold, and we're going to move right into our proclamation on Arbor Day. You stand with me? Good to see you. I haven't seen you in a while. All right, let me read this proclamation for you, Drew. It's Arbor Day, April 29th, 2016. Whereas in 1872, J. Sterling Morton proposed to the Nebraska Board of Agriculture that a special day be set aside for the planting of trees. And whereas this holiday, called Arbor Day, was first observed with the planting of more than 1 million trees in Nebraska and is now observed throughout the nation as well as the world. And whereas trees can reduce the erosion by wind and water of our precious topsoil, cut heating and cooling costs, moderate the temperature, clean the air, produce oxygen, and provide habitat for wildlife. And whereas trees are a renewable resource, giving us paper, wood for our homes, fuel for our fires, and countless other wood products, trees in our city increase property values, enhance the economic vitality of business areas, and beautify our community. And whereas trees, wherever they are planted, are a great source of joy and spiritual renewal. And whereas Winter Park has been recognized as Tree City USA once again by the National Arbor Day Foundation and desires to continue its tree planting ways. Now, therefore, I, Steve Leary, by the virtue of the authority vested in me as mayor of the city of Winter Park in the state of Florida, do hereby proclaim April 29th, 2016, to be Arbor Day in the city of Winter Park, Florida, and urge all citizens to support efforts to protect our trees and woodlands, as well as our city's urban forestry management program. Furthermore, I urge all citizens to please plant trees to gladden the hearts and promote the well-being of present and future generations. I will tell you, since Drew has gotten here, how many years ago now? 4 years ago. Began work on the Urban Forestry Management Plan, worked very hard with many staff members, many members of our community, especially Michelle Duvalier Noonan, our assistant city manager. Drew has been a blessing to our tree canopy, and future generations will thank you for your efforts on their behalf. Would you like to say anything? You're usually the quiet one. Would you like to say no?
Thank you all for your support.
This is the proclamation.
I like Tom a lot.
You want us to get one?
Everybody ready? 1, 2, 3, and one more time. 1, 2, 3.
Remind me not to forget my goodie bag.
All right, Pete, you started now. We got the pictures.
No, I'm going to just change the setting.
Is Gary here? Where are you, Gary? Gary, come on up, Gary. Is Dave here? Since? Great, thank you. Gary Heller, water treatment chief, and Dave Zuzzi, our water and wastewater utilities director. I want to present the following proclamation to remind each of us what a precious resource water is. Folks, you caught me on a bad day, too. I've got a little cold, so if I'm getting congested, figure that they find the longest proclamations for me to read when I can't read. It is Water Conservation Month, April 2016. Whereas water is a basic and essential need of every citizen, and whereas clean and safe and sustainable water resources and supplies are vital to the city of Winter Park economy, environment, and its people. And whereas the state of Florida, water management districts, and city of Winter Park all work together to increase awareness about the importance of the efficient use of water and advocating sound water conservation practices. And whereas the city of Winter Park and state of Florida have designated April, typically a dry month when water demands are increased, as Water Conservation Month to educate private citizens and other users about efficient use of precious water resources. And whereas the City of Water has encouraged and supported water conservation through various programs and is committed to setting a good example of it for its citizens regarding water conservation. And whereas every business, industry, school, and citizen can make a difference when it comes to conserving water. Now therefore, I, Steve Leary, by virtue of the authority vested in me as Mayor of the City of Winter Park and the State of Florida, to hereby proclaim the month of April 2016 to be Water Conservation Month in the City of Winter Park, Florida, and urge all residents and businesses to help protect our precious water resources by practicing water-saving measures and becoming more aware of the need to save water. I'm going to turn this over to Dave.
Hello, buddy. I'll be brief. I just want to thank the citizens, our commission, our sustainability board, our utility advisory board, of which we have a member sitting in the audience. And Gary, we all do a very good job and work real hard to try and conserve water, and that's really one of our biggest methods for having available relatively low-cost water for the long term. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave. Will you fix your phone, Gary?
There we go.
It's hard to get around Steve's head.
Okay, everyone ready? 1, 2, 3. And again. 1, 2, 3.
Congratulations, guys. I'm sorry, I didn't mean.
Oh, gosh, please.
Randy, City Manager's report.
We got one more, don't we, Mr. Mayor?
Healthy water.
Oh, I apologize. Yes, sorry about that. Just skip right past that one. Sarah threw me off.
After they called me, I'm going to be
right
around
here. I have my head up. You know I have a big nose.
Dr. Shearer, please. The Director of Orange County Health Department is going to join me at the podium. He has a presentation today to recognize our work towards being a healthy weight community. Please.
Mayor, we're going to present you with the award.
Excellent.
So, Mayor and members of the City Council, Florida Department of Health in Orange County is pleased to recognize the City of Winter Park for the third year in a row as one of the communities recognized statewide as a healthy weight community champion. Local governments were invited to submit best practice policies they have implemented to promote wellness, physical activity, to improve nutrition, and physical activity within their jurisdictions. These best practice policies are exemplified by the Healthy Weight Community Champions recognition. I applaud the City of Winter Park for the following initiatives that make it a community champion, and they are many. a complete streets resolution that was passed by the City Commission in May of 2011. Sidewalks are required per code for new construction. All local city streets are available for cycling with bike routes. The City Public Works Department has an annual sidewalk maintenance program. The City Parks Department focuses on maintaining fitness trails and has produced fitness and walking trail brochures for the parks. They've also created a brochure that highlights various downtown walking routes. The Bicycle Valet program is a place for all special events. This encourages residents to ride on their bikes to your city events, and it gives them a place to check in their bikes while visiting the events and all of the beautiful shops and venues and restaurants downtown. But that's not enough. You also have a fresh vegetable delivery program that was introduced with the assistance of the Healthy Central Florida group that brings fresh produce to park settings in an area that is considered underserved. Winter Park is proud to manage and operate a Saturday farmers market that's been designated Central Florida's best for the last 13 years. Wow. The community gardens located at the Mead Botanical Garden, and it didn't go unnoticed that the newly sworn in city commissioner is donating part of his salary to the botanical garden, was developed as a teaching classroom garden to promote the establishment of a neighborhood community gardens throughout the city. There are two community gardens on your city properties. Winter Park's Parks and Recreation Department has implemented the Whoa, Slow, Go healthy eating program in all vending machines within the city. And those are just a few of the best practices the Department of Health applauds the City of Winter Park for. So the City of Winter Park, as a healthy weight community champion, has positively impacted the lives and health of employees, residents, and visitors to this community, and continues to help prevent chronic diseases and encourages the community to live healthy lives. You can all be proud. So congratulations for being one of the 80 communities selected statewide in the state of Florida to be recognized as a Healthy Weight Community Champion for the third year in a row. Mayor, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Put her in the middle.
Yes. She's a lot better looking than me.
She's a little bit of a camera there. Okay. Thinking ahead. Okay, is everybody ready? There you go. Ready? One, two, three. And again. One, two, three. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First item I want to talk about is the next steps for the library and event center.
Is there anything else you want to cover off before that, Randy? That might be a lengthy discussion.
No, that's it. I'd be glad to answer any questions if you want to do that first.
Any questions for the city manager prior to this discussion item? No? Great, Randy, thank you.
Right. And I'm going to put one on the overhead for people to see.
Okay. Patrick.
As the commission knows, the library referendum passed, so the next step is we've got the request for proposals out for the architect to design the project. And later on in the agenda, we have a a chance for the City Commission to appoint a City Commission member to that selection committee. The proposals for that are due April 21st, with oral presentations on May 12th, and then it'll come back before the City Commissioner if all the timing works out on May 23rd. They'll begin negotiations, and then starting in June, they'll begin their design work. Once the design work has begun, we will be also hiring an owner's rep to help oversee the project, as well as a construction manager at risk will be part of that process. Along about, we're thinking around the 60% design phase is where we would decide how much to actually go out for the bonds. As you know, $30 million was approved, but that gives us that much time to get the project designed, get a real cost, and so we'll know how much to go out for. The $30 million was a not-to-exceed number, as you're aware. And then once we get into the closer to the 100% design, we'll begin the bid process for the construction components to be done. And then the Civic Center has bookings through December 20th, and that should be timing-wise about right for getting the design and the project bid out, and construction can begin right around January. With that, I'd be glad to answer any questions about that. You know, one of the things I did not plug into this process is that certainly we need to have a discussion about what the commission wants to do with the existing library site and how to proceed with that facility.
Is that the under April 12th?
We
have that.
Under April 12th, yeah, we can begin that conversation then. I really was just thinking about, you know, at that point, let's talk about what the process we want to follow on that. But the other part of that is the library board wants to talk to us about what the naming policy can be for naming rooms and that type of thing as part of their fundraising effort. So
maybe that second part doesn't belong there.
It certainly, I mean, if the commission's ready to have that conversation, we can certainly begin it at that time.
Randy, are you looking at a work session that day or just...
Well, right now, since there's no planning issues scheduled for that meeting, it looks like another short meeting. So I was thinking we'd do it as part of the regular meeting rather than trying to get the commission together for
a Tuesday. All right,
that's supposed to be that date's wrong then. It should be the Monday date, second
the 11th.
Monday. Yeah, it should be the 11th.
Okay, we can. Are you all okay if we come an hour early to discuss these items on the 12th?
Is there any backup or discussion? Is there any?
I'm hoping there will be backup by that time. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. You had to do it as a work session ahead of the regular meeting then, Mr. Mayor?
I don't know. You said it's a fairly light meeting as far as you see right now.
Right.
You all just want to fold it into the meeting?
Both items or the one item? I kind of view to discuss the use of the disposal of the current library as a... Do we hire another commission to do that? You know, I'd want to figure out for the new one, but you know, it's are we the ones that are going to make the decision on what to do with it, or staff going to present to us something, or?
Well, it's a policy decision, so that staff can certainly give you a recommendation, but.
But are we going to look at the cost benefit? Are we going to look at the possibilities of the different cash flows of what we can? Like, one of the things I'd like to consider certainly would be a land lease, would be possibly a use for City Hall. I mean, there are a number of things, but I would anticipate some data to look at the same time.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking it doesn't belong
right.
On that.
Obviously, if we're going into that type of detail in this first discussion, then staff needs more time.
I think this is going to be a multiple meeting discussion probably, so I offered up just to probably air some of the questions that staff can come back to at a later time to fill in the answers for. Is that fine?
When can we have a discussion between the five of us that is open and really considers all the possibilities?
I think we're going to expose some questions that we all have, hopefully, during the meeting of the 12th. We'll expose the questions.
11th.
11th.
Mr. Mayor, if I could.
Let me just finish up, Mr. Sardell. And then hopefully after that, we can either schedule a work session or have it as part of another meeting. I don't anticipate all the answers during this meeting. I actually think we're just going to expose some questions.
Yeah, I was going to say, our discussion could be of how we want to move forward. Not what we're going to do, but how we're going to...
What we need to see move
that, forward. That process, that we can decide on the process of how we're going to figure out how to dispose of the land.
And if we see that we're getting into too deep on this, we can table it as the meeting goes on, and we can certainly schedule a work session.
But, so we don't have anything on April 11th, we would be discussing this. It would not be anything on here that we were going to actually vote on that day.
I don't believe there's any decisions that are going to be made on that.
So it would just be a conversation.
Yeah, other than any assignments you want to give staff to research, that type of thing. Now, for the naming policy, we are looking for an agreement or adoption of the naming policy the library will be presenting.
Well, that's fine. I think we can get there if we have some backup brought to us before that, Randy. So if the library and staff are prepared to bring us some backup, we can probably make the decision on that item at that meeting.
Which item?
The item regarding naming rights.
Yeah.
So are you okay, guys, if we fold this into the meeting? And again, if we go a little bit long on the disposal of the library property, we can table that to another work session or something at that time.
Fine.
Is that good?
Yeah, but I think we should allow more than 15 minutes. Yeah. Okay.
That's fine. Sure. We schedule for 45?
Yeah.
For the entire thing? Okay. All right. Any other questions for the city manager regarding this?
Yes. I wasn't part of the decision not to include the location in the referendum, and I wasn't familiar with the logic that led to that decision. And I was just wondering what the attitude is of the other commissioners with regard to the determination of a location here seems to be definitive as to the use of the park and the concept that was approved by the task force. And I just wanted to get some input from the other commissioners on their attitude about that.
Yeah. Mr. Sedler.
Yeah, thank you. You know, one of the things all along with the library is the location is a good location, but it was not my favorite location. I would like to keep the library in the downtown area, and at the meetings when we're debating the ordinance, I wanted to make sure that, and also if we have an issue, like if there's a big sinkhole under it, so it would increase the cost, that we didn't have to hold it to that site. And, you know, one of the things that I've spoken to multiple people about that I think is worthy of investigation, we were looking at the post office site and we had a lower budget. And then we looked to, my understanding, I don't know the exact details, but we're told not to be looking at the post office site anymore, whether it was fiscal or it was negotiation, couldn't take place. And so I was looking at the post office location now, given, like, look at a 90-day time frame from a fiscal perspective, that right now we have a $30 million budget, that could it be done at the post office, say, for a $20 million budget, $22 million budget, and that I know there's a lot of people that would like to keep it in the downtown area, and I'm fine after 90 days if we can't work a deal, then let's go forward. This is a great facility that's going to be built. So I was looking at it from two perspectives, because I know there's quite a few people, you know, this was a 51-49% vote, I believe, and a lot of people did not like the tax increase, so I think we should be as fiscally responsible as we could. Randy, what's the if we did the 30 million, what's the estimated millage increase in points?
It was 0.49 mils.
Okay.
Yeah, 0.937.
Okay.
Commissioner, can I interrupt you for a question? You
yes,
said
sir.
From two areas. So you've mentioned fiscal.
Right.
That's the other area that you
to keep it downtown in the urban core, right off Park Avenue would be the post office site, if you will, that is just closer to the downtown park area. So, and like I say, I don't, if something can be worked out, or if it's fiscally, it's just, you know, it's not responsible to be doing this, then I think we have a great site and we move forward. I'm not, you know, that's where. So it's just, that's my thought process, and we can be doing that concurrently while moving forward with this. Because if you look at 90 days out, we now have our architect on board, but now we're telling them where to put it, as opposed to one side's going to the other side. So.
That's Ms. Crinkle.
Well, I think the first question that Commissioner Pete said was, why did the language sound the way it did? And I would defer back to the city attorney, who was very clear with us on how the language needed to sound. And so would you tell the group up here and the group out there why we did it the way it was required to be done?
Certainly, Commissioner Mayor, Commissioners, with respect to the bond referendum language, as you know, there's nothing in the document that the resolution that was approved that specifies a particular location for the library civic center parking facility. However, there was on the city newsletter that went out some indication that the, in fact, I think a statement that the task force had recommended this current civic center location. So although you're not bound to the civic center location, there have been communications to the community that suggest that the location would be on the civic center site. So at Randy and I have actually talked to our city's bond council about that, and if the location is to be different than the existing civic center location, we believe it might be appropriate to have a bond validation suit that would confirm the language at that a different location.
What does that mean?
If the commission, we need to evaluate a little bit more based on what was sent out, but if you choose to deviate from building the project on the existing civic center location, it may be appropriate to have what's called a bond validation suit, lawsuit, which you just pass a, you have a bond council file a suit that says, Judge, please confirm that we can do exactly what we want to do.
Okay.
What's
the cost associated with
that? I asked that question today. $5,000 to $6,000 if it's not contested.
Chris Frankel, you still have the floor.
Okay, so the other question is, since the actual location wasn't mentioned, but what was mentioned was garage, civic center, and library, can you remove any of those and still go forward, or do you are you still bound to all three?
You're going to be required, the city is required to do this as a single project.
Right.
The library, civic center, parking garage, all as a single project. You can't just do a library or just do a civic center. Now, you may be able to phase it, so you can have a library constructed and then later a civic center constructed in the park, but it all has to be done because that's what was before the voters, and the voters looked at that and said, we're approving this as a single project, not a library or a parking garage or a civic center alone.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Just, I wish I had the language in front of me. Did it say it has to be at the same location?
The actual referendum or the ordinance said, is it a very good question? There's some language in the ordinance that was adopted. I said resolutions, ordinance. It says the project, which is all three of the items, will be used for educational and cultural events and programs and have shared meeting spaces. So to have shared meeting spaces in two different locations, one for a library and then one for a civic center, creates some issues. So if they're right next to each other, not so much of a problem. If you've got a library that is 3 miles from or 2 miles from a civic center, the shared meeting spaces may be more problematic. Now, if you want to do that, again, as part of the bond validation process, we can ask that question and have the court rule on that. That will help solve some of the issues that are being raised by the commission. If you want to do a project that's different than a single project with all three items at one location.
Okay. Commissioner
Weldon. I've asked my question and I've received an answer.
Okay. I will say that I think that this language is very clear as to what we will be building. It doesn't say park a library facilities and a civic meeting and a parking structure. It is all inclusive, so I think that is fairly clear. I also think, I know, that in all the materials that went out in support of this, to support this referendum, the Martin Luther King site was the recommended site, was the discussed site. It was very apparent to everyone that's where this was going. and I will say even the efforts against this project were very clear that they knew it was going in Martin Luther King Park. So I just think it fails the smell test. I think that any change to that is, quite honestly, a bait and switch to the voters. I don't feel comfortable at all even discussing that we would possibly look to a different location after the process. We had a unanimous recommendation come from the task force. We had a unanimous vote at the city commission, and this went out to the voters as is. If you don't like it, I appreciate that. I've said all along that I understand. However, this is what went out to the voters, and I don't think there's anybody up here that can look out to the voters or look out to this audience with a straight face and say, just because the language didn't say the Martin Luther King site, that they didn't know it was going there. It's very clear to everybody on this day, as it should be, that that's what we took to the voters. So as far as being fiscally responsible, Commissioner, I appreciate that perspective. That was something that they looked at, and I think that was part of the reason that this site became the recommended site. So I hate to give staff extra work, especially something that can get us into some legal situations if this was what was brought before the voters and the voters took part in.
I actually, before we did the referendum, I tried to get the language on the ballot to very clearly specify Martin Luther King Park, and this commission would not support that. So I can look them in the face and say, when we voted on this referendum, I am comfortable that we are continuing conversation. In fact, I think it wasn't, not only did the commission not support the location, the commission was very clear that the design was not agreed upon. In fact, in the RFP, my understanding was, is that we were going to include in the RFP, and I believe we have, an actual scope of work for the new architect to continue further the discussions of design. So I'm not uncomfortable at all, because I had tried very hard to get a location specified, and since the commission would not do that, I would think that that would have to be considered in any legal judgment as to whether we can or cannot consider another site. So I'm not uncomfortable considering continuing to consider the possibility of what makes the most sense from a planning perspective and what makes the most sense from a financial perspective for the city. So I am not uncomfortable discussing that.
So Commissioner, you did not understand that when this referendum went out and the voters voted on it, you did not understand that we were talking about Martin Luther King solely?
I actually tried very hard to get this commission to commit to a location, and this commission refused to commit to a location.
Commissioner, that's my question. You are clear that you thought the location still had not been decided?
I thought the fact that the commission would not include the location as part of the referendum left that consideration open for further discussion as part of the design for the library.
Okay, Randy, can I go back? I want to go back because I do believe that we had a unanimous recommendation on site when the task force brought this for us. I believe that we ceased discussion on continuing discussions of other locations in the city, but we had a unanimous vote to accept and move forward with the library on that site. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so everybody that voted at the time, Commissioner McMahon, prior to Commissioner Weldon's seating, voted that the Martin Luther King Park was the site. And Commissioner, I remember your motion. I appreciate that you did. You certainly did bring that up.
Yeah, the question is, what did that mean? And so I had to, from my perspective, I had to try to figure out what you meant by refusing to support the location in part of the referendum. So,
but you did vote. When we voted, you voted on Martin Luther King Park as the location.
Sure. Okay. As did Commissioner Seidel, as did you.
Absolutely. And that's why I stand by it, that we all knew what we were voting on. And the major issues, and again, this is all a focus group of one, but the challenges that I had, or the challenges that I heard most about regarding this referendum, were not locations. They were mostly about pricing. There were some location questions, but primarily location. primarily financing and the expense. So I think, again, I think the voters who voted for and against, if they had knowledge of this project, it was pretty apparent it was set to go, and we voted for it to go forward in Martin Luther King Park. So I don't, while I'm always looking to be fiscally responsible, I believe as part of the discussion, as part of the process, the task force voted against this, and this commission did as well.
If I recall, and I'm not a huge, I'm not sure I'm a huge advocate of the, using the post office property, but I recall that discussion didn't go on more than, it was like a blink of the eye, and the decision was made, and I'm not sure where that advice came from. I'm trying to remember, generally trying to remember what happened to our discussion of the post office property. Seems so like it came up and we dismissed, saying it wasn't on the market.
It was an action item where I proposed to the commission a way to acquire it, which was building a distribution center out by the mall,
right,
by the
Fashion
Square Mall.
It was
a little over $6 million, I believe.
Yes,
the number
very
was,
expensive.
And the commission
solution.
Voted against
not to.
Proceeding with the acquisition. So, but that was kind of unrelated to the library discussion. That was,
yeah,
that was a standalone acquisition.
Right, and at the time, what was the budget for the library?
$15,000.
$15 million.
That's a great deal.
Right. So that's where I'm coming up with my $21 million number from. Is that
$21 million number? Yeah.
Is if the original library budget was about $15 million. I don't know. They stopped looking at the post office site, but my understanding was post office site was in that $15 million budget to build the library. But I don't know what facilities were in it. I was told they had a box drawn like they've been doing. And stuff, but then so if we relocate the post office for $6 million, we built the library at the post office now with the parking garage and some type of amphitheater, civic type center facility to it, we could save ourselves $8 or $9 million and still have the library within the downtown area. And part of this, though, Mr. Mayor, if you will, what I was thinking about was we could use some of the property at Progress Point that's in the back as a distribution, keep the post office retail at the library. And can that work? And that's why I said, well, you know, for to me, to do a 90-day investigation to see if we can save $9 million would be prudent. And that's all I'm asking for. I'm not asking for this is what we're doing. I'm saying let's figure out if this is feasible and we're going to save some money.
I hear you. And I certainly hope we can build something that our community is really proud of for $21 million. However, if we can build something on the library site for $21 million, we can build something on the Civic Center site for $21 million. It's a function of size and quality and materials and engineering challenges. And I'm all for, you know, trying to get a great result for $20 million instead of $30 million if we can do that. And there's a long path to get to the answer to that question. I hear you, but I'm not sure that the dollars are a function of the location. I think they're a function of the design and the materials used and engineering challenges involved.
Yeah, well, it became part of it became adding the Civic Center to the project itself, which, you know, so there was...
Well, but at the same time, Commissioner, you have to understand that also took the land cost out of the price, too, using the Civic Center site. There's what you're suggesting, I think, at this stage of the game, if you think the people that... I look at the people that came out against the ALF on Orange Avenue. If you tell them they're about to have a U.S. Postal Service distribution center in their backyard, that's not going to be resolved in 90 days getting through that morass. If you talk to people about putting a 60,000 square foot plus, I don't know, 10,000 square foot parking garage in Central Park, you may work the numbers all day long, but that's not going to, the community outcry against that, I think, is something you're underestimating. That's not going to get resolved in 90 days. I think we're at a point now where, again, we had a great recommendation. How many months did we spend on this? 18 months with the task force. The city commission looked at it. They've been before us. There are multiple workshops. There's plenty of community conversations. And the voters voted on a $30 million project going in Martin Luther King Park. And again, it was very clear to everybody up here that that's what this represented. And it was very clear coming from the task force. And I think it was very clear to most of the people that voted pro or con. So I think at this stage, it's really, I don't think it's the right thing to do to pull this and look at another area. And I do think there's value engineering to be had. As Commissioner Weldon mentioned, I think we have a lot of work to do in that regard, and I'm looking forward to that work.
Okay, I mean, just one of the points I want to bring up is
You know, when we had looked at our budget last year, I had asked for a millage increase to do projects. And this is the same size as that millage increase, I believe, that I just wanted to talk about the things that we could do. And so it, to me, it is kind of interesting. We're now going to have, you know, possibly the same millage increase that I was trying to get to do projects. But, and we only have, you know, in my mind, we have a 51% vote, where a commission vote is 60%. So there's, you know, because there's three of us. So, you know, so it is kind of one of these things where if it had come back 60%, I'd say, let's go. You know what I'm saying? I would be all for this because there's a lot of people that want this. And that's what, that's why I'm a little hesitant at that 51% number to be spending that much money.
Well, I don't know that we are spending that much money, and I hear you completely. I mean, I've been spending the last 2 weeks reading and thinking about this issue very carefully, as I'm sure we all have. And I don't have any indication that there's any better solution on another piece of property than has already been conceived. I also am open to a lot of alternatives for this meeting on the 11th to discuss the possibilities that might get us the post office site while we have the library and civic center at the civic center site. I think there are a lot of balls in the air. I think this creates a lot of opportunities that are worthy of considerable discussion. And I'm supportive of proceeding on the basis of assuming the location pending any engineering faults that could derail it from being as presented.
Well, I think to the 50%, your questions or your point there, Commissioner, also, you are assuming, I think you're making a large assumption there, that that 50%, a lot of the people were against it because of the location. And if we changed the location, that would have gotten us to the 60%. I would actually argue just in the opposite. That, and again, neither one of us has any kind of quantitative data to support our notions.
Right.
But I think if you're talking about putting a massive building in the West Meadow, I think you probably would have, the numbers would have been reversed. So I'm not sure we have enough data to support where you're trying to go with it. I appreciate you bringing it up. I just don't think at this time it's the proper path. We don't have this as an action item, folks. This is just a part of the city manager's discussion points, so we won't be taking action item on it. But I do believe that there's some people who showed up to talk about the library. Would you mind if I have them talk now, or do you want to wait till the 5 o'clock hour?
Talk now.
Let them be here.
Is that okay?
Yeah,
okay. Great. Why don't we do that then? Are you okay if we open up the floor?
Sure.
I'm sorry?
Fill out the yellow cards.
Yes, please. Cindy's going to strike me down if I don't ask you to fill out the yellow cards before you come up. And the first one breaks the rules.
Thanks, Sharon.
First of all, I need to correct you on something, Greg.
You can introduce yourself.
I'm Sean Schoenfeld. I live at 151 North Orlando. And I'm the director of the library. When the task force asked about the post office in December, the cost of the library, just the library and the parking garage, was $23 million. So it was never $16 million. And that was before, when we did the proposal for MLK, we both spent a lot of money having ACI do some design work and really drill down the costs. So a ballpark in December was $23 million. It was never $16 million.
Was that this December or was that last December?
Help me out. Last December? 14. Yeah, I don't think you were.
No, it wasn't.
You were not a commissioner then.
No. Okay.
That's okay. I'm staying for 3 minutes because really what I wanted to do is thank you. And we're very excited about moving forward. And thank you so much for all your support. And we're very grateful and very excited and partnering with you on this exciting project. So really, I just wanted to thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
If you.
I'm Jeffrey Johns, 1138 Park North Place in Winter Park. I also want to echo the thank you to our citizens for the endorsement of this 18-month process that's led us to this point. I will tell you, I got involved in the library a number of years ago when my wife, who was a retired school teacher and had a private tutoring business, kept coming home saying there's just no place to tutor at-risk children in our library anymore. There's just no place where you can take a kid and quietly tutor them in our library because we've outgrown it. There are boxes and offices everywhere. And so I got involved with the library for that and other reasons, and I found out she was right. Slowly but surely, our library was and is being left behind by new technologies and new ways of doing things, and our children and others were going to suffer if we didn't do something. And others felt that same way, and we began this journey to explore options and to get a great new library and event center to match the other great things that are available in our community. This is a flyer we sent out during the campaign, and I will tell you, I think the children in this flyer and their parents and grandparents should be very happy today because we're markedly closer to getting that new library that will not shortchange them and will give them the access to the tools they need to be successful in this great community. Before the passage of the ordinance to permit the bond referendum, I said that I thought this would be the signature event in this city in this decade, and I still feel that way. I think when we get this library built 5 or 10 years from now, people are going to look at this complex as the most vibrant new educational and entertainment complex in Central Florida. So on behalf of the task force and the library board, thanks to everybody for getting us to this point.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good afternoon. I'm Michael Poole, and I'm here to talk about the library, as you can imagine. And I do believe that if it had been the site had been downtown, you would have gotten a 60% vote. I don't think there's any doubt that keeping the library downtown was a major issue. I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about going forward. And I want to make sure that the plan process is good. So I'd like to see the engineering reports. I'm really worried about the traffic. You know, Harper Street's a small street. We're going to have a lot of traffic there, especially around the 4 to 7, 4 to 8 range. So I think that's the scary part to me about that site, is 792 is going to be hard to put a traffic light there. So I think you're going to have to do some reconfiguration, which might affect the impact on the park. So before we rush too fast, I'd like to make sure that gets that basic thing gets done. Any other developer who was going to put something there would have been required to do a traffic study by now. So let's look at that. The other thing is I don't think that the task force was able to do a deep dive enough into how the space allocation was. So if you look at that issue, I think that needs to be a big, big issue in the planning. You know, right now it feels like you're designing it from the outside in versus the inside out. And I really think we need to find out what programmatically we're going to do inside and then say, okay, hey, that's the right thing that we're going to put inside and then come out. The other thing that's basically missing is an operating budget. Again, we're missing operating budgets. This is not only for the library, but this is for the city because you're going to increase the city costs. You had a bigger park usage, more maintenance, more going on. So let's put together the right budget to make sure we understand the impact overall to our budget dollars, okay? So let's make that part of the planning process and make sure that the people that we choose have that within their scope. Because I'm really concerned we don't have it in there. It's about designing a pre-building. That's okay, we're going to get there. But let's get to the nuts and bolts. Thank you.
Thank you, school.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought this up. I did vote also, and frankly, when I voted along with many of the people in my neighborhood, we did.
Would you just identify yourself for the record, please?
Oh, no, I'm doing for sure. Okay. I'm Shay Selmer, and I live at 735 Hansen Avenue, and now I'm at a park, 32789. We were voting in our neighborhood and we were discussing it. We did feel that we were voting for, well, we thought we were voting for 30 million. And in terms of the location, we thought, well, they'll take the $30 million and then they'll decide what they, like, what they're going to do with this $30 million. They couldn't possibly do more than that because they haven't actually designed the building or located on the property for sure. And so there would still be a chance that it would be at, say, some other location. Not that we were aware. Of course, a lot of us are cheering for a downtown location because we like the village effect, you know, that the present library has. All to say that many of us like the idea of keeping it where it is. You could build half of it on stilts, as it were, move the library over, and then build the other half on stilts, as it were, having parking underneath, keeping the library downtown. You could even run a breezeway over to the hotel, and you could build in that airspace. You could build something. And it would be nice to have a civic center attached to rooms that everybody could stay in, and then you would only have to park one time. So, you know, maybe we didn't discuss that, but I'll just say having downtown is agreeable with many people. You asked.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ann Hicks-Miller, 61 Legion Drive. I didn't come planning to speak because I didn't think anybody would be speaking. But I do have to say, I just, you know, the vote was taken, and the vote wasn't 50-50. And I think a whole lot of people who didn't pay any attention until the last minute will be so thrilled with what comes out of this. There were a lot of community meeting opportunities. And they had good turnouts, but they didn't begin to be the turnouts that there should have been. There should have been 1,000 people at every one of those. There was so much information. There were extraordinary experts who came from around the country. I appreciated your question and your comments, Pete and Mr. Mayor. I should use formal name, sorry. I appreciated your response. I understand Greg's questions, but if you had been here for the whole long journey, there was just, it was never going to be something that every single person in this town agreed with. And I surely hope, just for example, the use that can be made of the park was one of the wonderful additions. I don't think you get a majority of people who want some big building overlooking the park. And there's already plenty of traffic on New York, and not a whole lot right now on North. So I don't see traffic as a big issue. I'm sorry Michael's left because I thought he made really good points, but I think those things have been considered. They just haven't been enunciated. That's part of the next stage. So I appreciate your listening. I appreciate your allowing comments. And I want again to say that I'm really enthusiastic about the library and the work that has been done to get us to this point. And I think what will come will make us even more proud to be people who live in Leonard Park. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we're going to close the floor to public comment. The one thing I'll say, too, is I do think that given the vote and given where we were with the vote, I do think as much effort that went into attempting to secure public input and public participation, I think we need to get back out and do a little bit more. I did not comfortable at that voting threshold, but the vote was the vote. I would like to get back out to the community, and I think there's opportunities to do that, and Randy and I have discussed those just as an aside, but I think there's opportunities to get back out and kind of get additional information out to the public so we can get a greater buy-in. So just to let you know that. All right, any more questions for the city manager? Great. Let's move on. City attorney.
Yes, Mayor and Commissioners, just two items. We are, as a city, under contract with Rollins to buy the old building on our property. Expect to close within the next 6 weeks, maybe sooner than that. Secondly, as to the Showalter field and Showalter East property, Randy and I, you know, met with the OCPS and their general counsel and others. Waiting on their comments, I've communicated with Woody Rodriguez, their general counsel. Expect their draft or comments back by this Thursday. So we're on it.
Spring break off.
Okay.
That's it. Thank you, Mayor.
I'm hopeful we can get that thing. We're in the home stretch.
Yes.
Uh,
at our meeting,
we need you from a timing standpoint.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And I think they expect to have it on their agenda, I think Woody said April 11th. So if that's the case, I mean, it's got to be on our agenda as well for the next week, so it's going to be tight. I guess we'll present at the same time, so hopefully there won't be any changes by either side. Regardless of that, the meeting was a very productive meeting. I think OCPS staff and city staff were in agreement on most issues, so I do not expect to see a problem.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Any questions for the city attorney? No. Thank you.
Sure.
We have CAFR. Wes?
This is loud.
This is loud.
Yes.
Mayor and Commission, it is allowed. This is the big event of the year for the Fire Department. We get to present to you the comprehensive annual financial report. We've lots of work got put into preparing this document. I'd like to recognize some members of our department that had a lot to do with its preparation. We're with us Karen Cockham, our Assistant Finance Director, Franco Catalan, Chief Accountant, and Rick Zellman, Chief Accountant. And there's a lot of good information in here. We'd be glad to go into it in further detail with any of you if you would like at any time. The statements were prepared by the Finance Department. They were audited by Mayor Stevens Lovelace. Dan O'Keefe, a partner with Mayor Stevens Lovelace, is here to give a presentation, and I will turn it over to Dan.
All right, thank you, Wes. Welcome, Dan.
Your presentation. Oh, there it is. Very good. Thanks, Wes. Mr. Mayor, members of the Commission, it's a pleasure to be here this evening to present your September 30th, 2015 audit reports. There's a whole bunch of them. And what I'll do is I've got a little presentation to kind of go through with you. First off, you know, we have a bunch of different communications we have to make to you, and certainly this year was a little unusual year because of the big implementation of probably one of the largest standards we've seen in a while deal with pension plans. And staff was cranking this thing out, you know, just really within the past week, putting the final touches on it. They really wanted to try and get this thing presented to you before the end of March, which I think was a good move on their part. But if you want to meet with me individually, I'll be happy to do that at any time I'm available. And certainly just, you know, contact my office and set something up, and I'll come to a mutual location, and we can sit down and talk one-on-one about some of the details of the report. But I think it's important to kind of get this type of information available to the elected officials in your community within a, you know, reasonable amount of time. I will tell you that we have a lot of clients that still have not issued their reports yet. So this whole pension thing really is a drag. As a matter of fact, all of the counties that we do have gotten extensions, and because they're waiting for information from the Florida Retirement System. So until they can get that information, they can't update their financial statements. Fortunately, your pensions, you have your own pensions. So there's a lot to it. So anyhow, let me kind of walk you through some of the areas here. As Wes mentioned, they prepare the financial statements, but we audit the financial information in there. So our deliverables are several different opinions that you find in the report. You know, one is actually the opinion on the financial statements, whether they're prepared in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles, you know, under non-material respects. You find that report on page 17. There's other reports that we have to do by regulatory requirements. In the state of Florida, you have to follow what's called the Yellow Book, which is issued by the Government Accountability Office of the federal government, and it sets out specific government auditing standards that must apply. In that particular report, we have to refer to internal controls and also compliance issues as it relates to the financial statements. You find that report on page 147. There's another report that has to be issued related to your, you know, federal state financial assistance programs. So this is, one is a federal report based off of OMB Circular 8-133. Another deals with state financial assistance required by Florida statutes and the rules of the Auditor General. And you'll find that report on page 149. There's a schedule in there that's required. It's called Findings and Question Costs, even though there may not be any findings and question costs, but there's other information in that particular schedule that tells you what programs we actually specifically tested. There's a management letter on page 156 or 155, and that's required by the rules of the Auditor General, which they get their authority through the Florida statutes. And then there's an independence accountants report that deals with your investments. And again, this is driven by Florida statutes and mandated by the rules of the Auditor General, which is on 159. This right here is just a summary of what management's responsible for. So pretty much, think about it, all the books, underlying books and records that support the data in the financial statements, they're required to maintain, they're required to have good internal controls, they're required to comply with laws and rules, including, of course, those that are adopted by the Commission. Our responsibilities, we'll get into a second, but also they're also responsible for notifying us of any instances of potential fraud or giving us any information that we need related to potential audit adjustments that have to be made in the financial statements. Our responsibilities is to follow the vast number of audit standards that we have to follow and basically verify that a lot of this information was taken care of by management. Now, we don't look at every single compliance issue in the city because you have a lot of them. But those that have a direct and material impact on the financial statements, those are the ones that we do look at and we do actually test. And really, when we look at a set of financial statements like this, they're really riddled with compliance requirements. If you look at your bonds, you have bond covenants that are attached to them. If you look at your investments, you have investment policies that are attached to them. If you look at your procurement side, which is, you know, a fairly large, complex ordinance that was passed by the Commission, you know, we have to look at that and do testing. And that's just a sample of areas that we look at. As far as internal controls go, we don't actually render an opinion on internal controls. What we do is consider those controls in our testing. So if we go in and we find some strong controls in a certain area, we can go in and test those controls and possibly limit other work. On the other hand, if we don't feel the controls are substantive enough, we have to go in and perform additional procedures. So internal controls is kind of work into the overall audit process in terms of how we conduct the audit. Compliance are going to be those issues, as I mentioned, that have a direct and material impact on the financial statements. Those are the ones that we're obligated to test you on. And certainly in the area of federal and state financial assistance, major projects that we identify, we have to go in and drill in and test compliance for those as well. We are required to communicate to you whether or not we saw any significant unadjusted differences, which we did not. We had no disagreements with management. As far as we know, they didn't go around and shop opinions from other accountants. We use what's called a risk-based approach. So really every year kind of changes. We change it up for a couple of different reasons. One, we don't want management thinking that we do the same audit each year from year to year to year. So we can kind of change up our different procedures, come up with different methodologies, test different things. So every year is a little bit different. We still have to go back into the financial statements and still give you the comfort of knowing that the financial statements are fairly presented. But here's a variety of different procedures that we use during that process. And the Government Accounting Standards Board has been kind of busy. That's the group that issues all of the pronouncements necessary for management to follow to prepare the financial statements. For the big item this year was GASB 68, dealing with pensions. In a brief background on this, governments were the only sector that were not having to actually book into the financial statements the net pension liability. And a net pension liability is very simple. It's the total pension liability, which is actually determined which is the value of everything that's going to be paid out in current dollars less what you actually have in your pension trust fund. So if you take those two, the liability less the assets, that gets you net pension liability. So it's a true liability. It's a liability that the commercial sector has been reporting for years, the nonprofit sector has been reporting for years. Finally, the government sector is mandated to record this as well. What's important about it is that before this, you didn't really have in your financial statements true financial position. In other words, showing you what your total assets were, what your total liabilities were, what your net position is. And your net position is basically your net worth. So it was a critical statement. They've been working on it for about 10 years. There was a lot of debate, a lot of determination of what needed to go into the statements. So your disclosures in the statements have changed, how the amounts are presented in your statements have changed, the schedules that are required have changed. It was quite an undertaking to try and get all this information updated and put in your statements. The rest of these things that are listed in here, some of them are going to have a future effect, kind of go where I don't think are going to really be significant to the city you want to park the. I will tell you, though, that the next big item that they're going to be looking at is other post-employment benefit liabilities, and that's going to be the next one that they'll nail down, and something similar will happen as did happen with the pensions.
Let me ask you a question about that. Mm-hmm. Is there a point at which it becomes advisable that we are funding that OPEB?
You know,
it's a trigger event or ratio or something.
You know, what's interesting in Florida, and this is why you have it, it's not that you have absolutely OPEB that you have built into your benefit plans. Basically, what it is that if an employee retires, and let's say they retire before they get on Medicare at 65, they can, by law, participate under your insurance plan. By their participation alone, supposedly drives up the premiums of the pension plan. So it's called an implicit rate increase. The health plan, I'm sorry. It's an implicit rate increase. So in other words, it's this actually determined number. It's not an absolute number, but it's because of their participation, even though they're paying for it themselves, and this is important for you to know, they're paying the premiums out of their pocket, but because they're participating, you have an older population now participating, it drives up your rates. And that has to be calculated and captured, and that's what's identified. I will tell you that a lot of municipalities, and Randy probably knows this with the Florida League of Cities, they've been lobbying like heck trying to get that law changed, because if that law gets changed, guess what's happened to that liability? It disappears. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens along the way. Now, as far as the funding side goes, I mean, implicit rate, it could make sense to do that, and certainly you're healthy enough a municipality where you could probably do some funding, and I have seen those. A lot of entities haven't wanted to do it because of the possibility that the law might be changed, in which case you don't want a lot of money stuck in a trust fund that you may not have access to. So that's the reason why you wouldn't do it. Now, if you were actually paying out real costs, I would be recommending highly that you do it. And there are some entities out there paying real costs where they're actually paying for the health care premiums of retired employees, in which case those you should absolutely fund. And there are some other standards coming up down the line, but I'm not going to kind of get into details there. We get a representation letter from management at the end of the audit, and it's fairly detailed. And bottom line is we're asking them to tell us that they gave us everything we needed. And so there are specific issues that we have to hit. In terms of the team assigned to this engagement, everybody in my team are governmental specialists. That's all I do is I head the firm's governmental practice group, but I don't do anything else except governments. We also have to bring in our IT specialists because, you have a significant information technology system here. This was the audit schedule that we pretty much had agreed with management early on. And again, there's always possibilities for improvement in terms of the timing of getting the report to you sooner, this year it just really wasn't practical. And now we kind of gave you a brief financial analysis. I threw this slide in here just to kind of give you that little comparison of what's the difference between governmental financial reporting and commercial reporting, because they are very different. The purposes are very different. The commercial sector is driven by bottom line and profitability. The government sector is driven by transparency and accountability. So when you're looking at financial position, that's certainly important, but more so is looking at how money is spent, especially as it taps up against your budgetary process. Your budget's a legal document. It's a very important document. You go through public hearings. The public has input into it. Well, that instrument right there is something that's mandatory in the government sector, but it's optional in the commercial sector. And it's one of the significant things that separates the two. The other thing that really separates the two is the fact that fund accounting is so prevalent in the government sector because you're having to isolate specific revenues for specific purposes that are highly restricted. So it's more in the commercial sector, you have one balance sheet, one income statement, one cash flow statement, and that's it. The statements are pretty boring in the commercial sector compared to the government sector. There's a lot more meat to the government sector. Some of the key differences in terminologies, expenditure just simply means the flow of financial resources. So if we go out and have an expenditure for capital in a governmental fund, that's going to be recorded as an expenditure in the operating statement. But if we're at the top level, we're going to take that asset, throw it on the balance sheet, depreciate it. Well, now that becomes depreciation expense. If you deal with revenues in the governmental funds model, revenue is recognized when available, but in a full accrual model, it's when it's earned. So governmental funds use what's called modified accrual basis of accounting. Proprietary funds use a full accrual basis of accounting, as does your pension trust funds. And these are reporting units. So that's what I was telling you before. We don't just render one opinion. We render multiple opinions. So we're rendering opinions on your top-level statements, and we're rendering opinion on your individual major funds, and then we're rendering an opinion on your aggregate of your non-major funds. So that, and we're also rendering an opinion on your budgetary statements. So there's multiple opinions that we're looking at. If you're in the commercial sector, you'd be rendering opinion on a single set of financial statements. Where here, we're measuring it at multiple levels. Now this right here is just kind of giving the summary of the impact of the changes related to booking in your net pension liability at your top level statements. So this is showing the change of what your total net position was at the beginning of the year and how it was reduced by bringing this liability in and what your balance of your net position was. Now I will tell you that I've seen cities that have had to do this adjustment where they end up with a negative unrestricted net position in their governmental activities, and I've seen the worst case scenario where they've made the adjustment and their total net position went negative. When I looked at your financial statements, yes, there was a reduction in the total net position, but you still have a positive unrestricted net position, which is really good, and your total net position is very strong too. There's a portion of it that gets allocated over to your enterprise funds. Wasn't that much, didn't really have a significant impact on your enterprise funds, but still, when I look at these adjustments and look at your city's financial position right now, it didn't really impact it extremely negatively, I should say. You're still in positive shape, yeah.
Didn't we plan for this, though, and haven't we been working for this? And this isn't a new law. We were working towards this. This isn't a surprise for us.
No, all this information has been disclosed in the financial statements for years, but this is the first time we're actually seeing it booked in as an absolute liability in your statement of net position, which is like your balance sheet. Okay. That's a good point, though. So if you look at this is a top-level analysis, and I can say this is like your 30,000-foot view of the city of Winter Park. If we look at, all your governmental funds, and we add them all together and convert them to accrual basis of accounting, This is really your true financial position of the city. The same thing with your business activities, taking all your proprietary funds, putting them all together. What does your city look like? So you can see your total assets, you can see your total liabilities, and most important, the fact that you have a strong net position. And if you look at your unrestricted as a percentage of your total expenses, that's a really good ratio. If you look at your change in net assets, you know, it's all positive. So there's really nothing wrong with this financial position as the city of Winter Park goes. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of cities in the United States that would love to have, you know, this this statement. If you go over to your fund financial statements, these are basically your major funds that we had to go in and audit and drill down into. The general fund is the mothership. That's probably the most important fund in the city. One of the numbers I always look at is the unassigned fund balance as a percentage of total expenditures. You're exactly where I recommend cities to be, around 25%. One of the reasons why you want to be there is you want to have enough in place in case something happened, like in 2004, where we had all these hurricanes, and you had some reserves in place to kind of get you through, you know, probably one of the most catastrophic events that has ever hit Central Florida.
Dan, so, all your clients, can you tell me how many people are at that mark? How many groups?
I would say probably 50% of our clients are at this mark and or above, and the rest of them are below and trying to get here, you know. But everybody's trying to kind of hit the, because that's kind of become kind of the common mark, if you will, of 25%. There's some that are a little bit higher for different reasons. But you're really kind of where everybody would like to be, quite frankly. And then if you look at your budgetary activity, revenues came in pretty strong. Your appropriations, you know, stayed under budget, so there was no significant issues there. Your proprietary funds looked really strong, if you look back in the history of your electric system, you know, it went through some turmoil early on in the years, but it's now really strong. You're hitting your coverage marks, which is very important as far as your bonds go. So you've got good standing in your proprietary funds. And that's, Mr. Mayor, I'll be happy to answer any questions, but that is my report.
Thank you, Dan. Any questions?
I'll ask the question. Sorry. So we lost 100 people. That was amazing to me, that when you had the projections and numbers that we were down people this year over last year. It was 108 people that we were down, numbers of people. If you look at 2015.
Population.
No, I'm sorry. You're looking at me like, what are you talking about? Okay. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm just looking at the numbers. There's a few things that jump off the page to me. Of course, I always look at the fact that you look at the percentage of the budget that you're spending, 26% of your budget on police and 23% of your budget on fire. Those are big items that we're spending, and a lot of times people start talking about, well, how do you spend it? And that's another whole issue, but those percentages, are those in line with what you see in other places?
Yes.
Okay, and I think that's the best news for us as a community. I still would love to have something other than spending $1 million a year on vehicle replacement. Poor Randy hears me all the time talking about our 385 vehicles, but I just wonder sometimes if that is not too much money that we're spending on vehicles in our community, especially because they're just such nice vehicles. And so I still will tell you that I'd love to see if there's any way that other cities that are like us are doing something with vehicles that we don't know about. And I ask it every time, because I look at that and think it's just a big ticket item for vehicles. Of course, we like to drive nice cars, I got that, but I just want to bring that up one more time, because vehicles, something I'll always look at. And for me, when I looked at this and was going through it, because of what we've just had the community vote on with a $30 million bond possibility, I want to know, can we afford it? Okay, so when I look at this, and I wanted to say that I see where we're going with the bonds that are coming off, and obviously we voted for it, but what does that really mean for us?
And you heard the commissioner over here say, you know, last year when he was sitting here for the first time with the budget, he said, hey, let's consider some of these other things and have a tax increase. And we were all sitting up here and saying, no tax increase, no tax increase. And so I looked at the bonds in here and I saw what was going on with that. I just want to know what would happen if we actually exercised $20 million of the $30 million bonds that are available to us versus $30 million.
Well, it comes down to a revenue source,
right,
to pay them off. You
right.
know, if you have a revenue source to pay them off, you know, you can have whatever you want.
And that's property taxes for
yeah,
us, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't work on the forecast or anything, so I assume that your FA probably worked with you to give you some type of parameters of how much revenue you would need to pay how much debt service over a period of time. Now, the good news is the interest rates on municipal bonds are amazingly low right now. So that works in your favor, obviously.
All right. Thank you.
And just so you know, the millage rate at $30 million is 0.493. Mm-hmm. The millage rate at $20 million is 0.329.
Right.
So, and with the golf course bonds coming off this year, that's about a quarter.
That's right.
So.
And the other bonds that
the
other
bonds are expiring in 2021.
In 2021, and then you look at the CRA,
right,
and that's still going to be out there for a while, mm-hmm, longer.
So. I think that the whole story of the funding of this center is not told yet.
Right.
I think hopefully we'll go through some processes to value engineer this event. Any questions?
Thank you. You did a great job.
Mr. Weldon?
I would just like to comment, as someone new to the commission, thank you for providing me with this financial situation to oversee along with you.
Well, we welcome your input, given your background especially.
Yeah.
Ms. Miller, just as a point of information, under our charter, we have to bid out the audit services every 3 years. I believe this is the third year of the contract, so we'll be coming to you to put a selection committee together to put it out to bid again. So.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, thanks. We appreciate it. Well, it's nice work.
Sure.
Yes, thank you. Okay, the electric underground. What do we have coming up, Dan?
Yeah, Ms. Mayor, as Dan and Troy come forward, I just want to kind of give you a little precursor. You know, we've been in the electric business for 11 years now, and in 2013 we began this. Even though we've been doing some undergrounding out of bond money and the what we call the plug-in projects, which are the ones where the neighborhoods voted to accelerate undergrounding. It was really 2013 that we began what we thought was a 10-year or so program to put all the power lines underground. And in those 2 years now, we've learned a lot. Remember, we came to you with a very elaborate, and I know Dan's going to talk about some of this, stepping on his toes, but a very elaborate program for prioritization. We've learned that there may be better ways to do some of those projects that would help us loop systems, and Dan's going to get into that. I won't cover much of that, but we also learned that there's more efficient ways financially to do some of this. As you know, since we began, we've had a contract with Inco that has been both our operations manager, our engineering services, and they were even overseeing the subcontractors that were doing some of the undergrounding, and it worked well initially, but what we found in this last year is we went way over budget on our capital spending, and as a result of that, we've made some changes. And I know I've talked to some of you individually about that, but we brought the contract manager in house, which is Dan De Alessandro, and we brought the engineering services in house. So now we use a terrible phrase, but we had the fox watching the hen house to some degree on spending and capital. So now we've brought all that in-house so we can get a better handle on it. We're using unit pricing to do our undergrounding project, so it's much easier for us from the design phase to know what a project is going to cost. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dan and let him walk you through.
Well, let me put you on hold for 1 second. It is 5 o'clock, so why don't I just see if there's anybody here that wants to talk at the 5 o'clock hour. I apologize. I let this start before I did that. Would you guys mind just stepping aside for a moment? Let's open the floor to public comment. Anybody wishing to speak to the commission on any items that are not on our agenda, please step forward. And I apologize for the hiccup.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Mary Daniels, 650 Canton Avenue. Couple things. One quick thing. When you guys are, I shouldn't say guys, when you all are speaking to each other, sometimes we can't hear you because your mics are out and Carol and yours were really bad this night. One of the things, sometimes it seems like things can listen to the shuffle. And I do want to bring up, while we're talking about MLK Park, I didn't know whether it come up when you were talking to the library or what, but with the design for the MLK, there was a task force, Commissioner Sprinkle, myself, Randy, Reverend Dawkins, who is deceased, Reverend Williams, Carol Fennell, and Joyce Swain. And I must say it was one of the better task force that I've ever participated on. And we worked tirelessly and had the ribbon cutting, the opening of it, had the plaque there. And I believe, John, you have the design still at the community center, Mr. Holland. And I'd like to see that come to fruition. I believe last year you all had like $100,000 in the budget for the park, and then we did the bathrooms and everything. And I can't see any reason why that can't be fulfilled. I know there are some people that have purchased bricks, but I see where I believe that it can be completed. And as people continue to purchase bricks, then you can pull that brick and have it monogrammed. And I think that way people would be more enticed because, you know, we had that big opening and it was approved. We went through the process. And nothing's happened. So it's hard to tell someone to buy bricks. And I've had people that ask me and say, you know, we purchased bricks, what's happening with that? So I would like to see, with us talking about the library and everything else, that corner, we planted the trees, the apple trees, and we have the palm trees there. And we also have that plaque and the design. And I believe you still have that, right? So I would love to see that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Daniels. Anything else? Great. Troy, Dan, the guys in ties. I'm not used to seeing you guys in ties.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to get a little opening. You know, like Randy was saying, we've been very busy since Jerry retired October 1. We've had three really major undertakings going on. And the first of those is to actually build our operations center on our own piece of property and be able to terminate our lease at our metric site. You know, we're spending over $150,000 a year on that lease, and so, you know, that payback is very short. And so that's been a major undertaking. The project is almost done. We are moving in people. We're moving us, our materials over, and so the lease will be ended by the end of April. Our next big item was the transition from an NCO-operated system to basically a city operation system. And April 4th will be our first day of running the facility all on our own. And so it's been a big transition. You know, we've had to come up with, you know, all of the processes and all of the people. And so, you know, we're really excited about that. And then our third major item is to actually, you know, put our hands around this undergrounding plan and make this, you know, promise come to fruition. And so what Dan's going to talk about is where we are in the undergrounding plan and just some of the things that we've learned, some of the things that we see going forward. And so we're excited to be here.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Here we go. So like Troy was saying, we're going to talk about what we've seen, he and I both being new to our roles, me being new to the city and Troy being new to his role. trying to grasp what was built before us and understand it and perhaps improve upon it. If you recall, the original plan consisted of 75 projects. Each had multiple segments within the projects. It was estimated that we would be able to average 5 miles per year at a rate of $3.5 million on the spend. The projects were basically designed with a heavy emphasis on protecting our tree canopy. And this is not as easy to read, but it's basically the criteria that was put together to give us our prioritization. And it's just saying 40 points were assigned to the trees that were identified as in risk, and we were going to take those areas first. An additional 20 points were assigned based on the aesthetics to our community. And 20 points was assigned to a three-phase mainline feeder, so that's your bigger feeders with the assumption, okay, the bigger feeders are going to affect more people. Let's put that priority on that. And then 10 points down to a smaller feeder and so on. And then the ENCO personnel went out and assessed based on their local knowledge where there's been some trouble, where there's been a lot of outages, and we were able to put 20 points on that, all the way down to 10 points to no points if they said there was no trouble. So that's kind of basically what started us out. It was a really good plan. It was a good plan to get us on our way to prioritize, which I think was a really well thought out plan. Where we are today, projects 1 through 10 are basically, and I say basically, complete because Bright House is still on some of those poles and we're working. They work well with us from what I've seen so far. Getting a process in place to get those lines removed, they're not quite as fast as us, but they're working well with us. Project 11, which is behind Project 12. Project 12 was placed a little bit above Project 11 because we identified multiple outages that were unacceptable, so we moved that up. Project 12 is going to be complete around June. Project 11, we've already started the boring on. Our contractor, HDD, has done about 80% of that boring in there. And then various other segments have been completed while we're doing major projects, such as Rabidage or any projects that are done around when we're doing undergrounding. Some project segments have been completed within that just by the nature of what's been done. So we say the city's modified plan. Again, the plan that was put together was well thought out, and without it, we'd kind of be pandering, wondering where to go next. But since we already have that prioritization in front of us, and it was a well thought out prioritization, all we would like to do is expand that. So we'd like to follow the initial priorities developed in that plan, review the section of the feeder that project comes off of. In the industry, that's known as a quarter point. I'll explain that in just a second. And convert anything that's fed off of that portion of the feeder at that time, rather than doing segments. So on a feeder, you may have done a couple segments, and maybe 10 years down the road, at the end, you come back on that feeder that didn't have a heavy tree canopy or something and do the rest. What we're saying is do it all while you're there in that segment. And also install the conduits to the projects for the services while we're there as well. What that will do is keep us from jumping back and forth. This is perhaps tough to see, but hopefully you have it in front of you, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is not to scale. This is something I put together just to try to demonstrate what a quarter point is. Basically, we have Canton Substation, which is up there on your top left, and the Interlocking Substation, which is on your bottom right. In the center, the black lines that you see are switches. That's a function of a switch on a drawing. The one in the center that you see that's open, that is open. It says, in other words, you can see that the connection isn't made. It's open. So what it does is it feeds from Canton Sub all the way to that open point and stops. And it feeds from the Interlocking Sub all the way to that open point and it stops. And everything that feeds all the homes and businesses within those sections are fed off the individual side. The reason in our industry there's loops is so in the event a line goes out, you can simply open a switch and close that open switch and refeed it from a different direction and get as many of our customers on as quickly as you can while you're doing the restoration efforts. So does that kind of make sense? So you'll see there's a switch that's closed right outside the Canton Sub, and then there's an open switch, and then there's a switch that's closed right outside interlock and sub, and then an open, and the same open switch.
So, to look at it from a redundancy standpoint, what is that from a timing standpoint? Is that going to affect any of your timing of underground?
It will. It will affect it positively, but it will affect it in the prioritization. I'll explain in just a second. I'll get to that a little more clearly. I just wanted to make sure I understood what a quarter point is, so I don't know that there is. This piece of line between the substation and that first switch is what we would call a quarter point. There's four of them, hence a quarter. Everything that's fed off of that line is within that quarter point. There's all kinds of distribution lines with all that attach to that feeder. So, kind of just giving you an outline of what a quarter point is. Hopefully that didn't make it worse. Another part of the plan is to assess the existing underground. So we're coming in these areas and we're doing this overhead conversion, and we could be on a street that Progress Energy put the underground lines in 30 or 40 years ago, and those lines are deteriorating. What we're doing now is, in the middle of the night when your power goes out in one of those areas, we send our crews in, and then you're out of power and they're either digging it up, which hopefully they're not. Hopefully we're getting HDD to come in and they're boring a new section in. So reactively, we're replacing segments. What we'd like to do is, we're doing these quarter points. We'd like to come through and assess those areas, and if they are old and decrepit, we're going to replace them within that quarter point as well. And we'll base that on the age of the cable and the outage history that we have. And the other part that we'd like to do on the modified plan that hasn't been done perhaps is make sure that while we're in the areas, we're doing all the street lights as well, not just the main feeder or whatever. Now, this is difficult to see. I couldn't figure out a way to make it any better.
Hey, Dan, I'm sorry. Can I just clarify? You said you're doing all streetlights. I want to make sure that I understand that. When you say that, are you replacing streetlights?
No, sir.
Making sure the service...
I'm sorry. Making sure that the cable that feeds...
That's what I thought. I just want to be clear that you're not going in. Some expectations are not set that you're replacing all the streetlights.
No, that was unclear on my part. It's the cable that feeds the streetlight that's being replaced, and sometimes that's been overlooked. So... for the people in the audience, this is not as clear to see. Hopefully you can see it up there. This is the existing underground plan for Project 11. Let's see, where are you there? Up there is Howe Branch Road. That line up there is Project 55. So as you can put that in your mind, we're doing Project 11, which is the red line that runs vertically. Project 55 would be attached to that project, but we wouldn't be touching it for however many years. Project 55, is that right? And then the green line is Project 23. There's more of Project 11 and a little more of Project 23 that's not shown here. This is just for illustration. What I'd like for you to understand is, we would just do the red line in Project 11, just the red line. That's the way it's been done in the past. Everywhere the green line intersects with the red line, we would have to put a box called a primary enclosure, which I'll show you a picture of in a second. From that primary enclosure, we would have to dig an underground to the first pole back. They would climb the pole, run a wire up the pole, and we would feed the overhead from the underground, which is not typical, but that's what you would have to do. So, this is even harder to see, but it's the same picture. And what it's showing is the way we would like to do it, which makes everything a loop. Like that feeder I described, the underground system should always be a loop. So if there's a cut, it can be switched out and repaired after all the people are back in power. In an underground loop, you can cut a wire anywhere and everybody can stay in power with some switching. If it's a radio, which is the way it's currently designed, if the line is cut, they're without power till the line is repaired. It's a huge reliability plus doing it this way. If you look in this up here on that Project 55, the reason why you see nothing there is because this over here is where we separated from Duke Energy. It's the dead end. It's not feeding anything. So that line's coming out all together as part of the modified Project 11. This area right here, you see the dotted line?
Yeah.
What's the name of the place? Tuscany Place? Tuscany Place. That's an underground subdivision that's existing. When we went out here and assessed this project, we went in that subdivision and we opened up every transformer and identified that the wire has been replaced reactively through time. It was put in, the last piece was put in 2007. So those people have gone out of power enough times throughout the time. That's all new wire now. So we don't need to address that. But there will come a time in some projects where we'll have to, and that'll be done within the project. So now, in this system, where that was just a green line and there was going to be a box there, it's going to be appropriately made into a loop. It's going to come back here. It's going to be done as you're going. There will be no returning. And the other piece of that that's very important that I've run into since I've been here is customers going, why are you going down Via Tuscany and my corner is still overhead? You're right on our street. You've just replaced our wire, but the corner of the street that you're on is staying overhead. And so this, and that's a great question, and this is just a little better plan to make more reliable, save money, because those boxes I was telling you about and the wire that runs up the pole is unnecessary expense. That doesn't need to be there. It needs to be made at the time it's done into a loop, and it'll be very functional. Yes, ma'am?
But did we even have in the plans to redo Tuscany Place?
Oh, yeah, that's Project 11.
It was already in there.
Oh, No, ma'am.
Okay, so if they were already undergrounded and we wouldn't even have added them to the plans, and now we're going to go back and put them in a loop, isn't that going to cost more money?
Yes, ma'am, but let me say this. That's not going to be very many, and it's not put them in a loop. They should already be a loop, because that's the way Progress Energy designed everything. It would just be replacing it. So I'm saying while we're there and we've got the boring machines there rather than being reactive, if I go into a place like Sevilla, the wire was put in the 70s. It's very old. It's what they call concentrics. It's not protected. It goes out on a regular basis. I would prefer while the boring machine is there and the crews are there to shoot the bores and do that loop, replace it proactively, and be done with it. Yes, there's an additional cost, but the savings in efficiencies in the end outweigh it. But to speak to that and your question, Mayor, so in this scenario, Project 55 along Howe Branch gained the benefit of being done at the same time Project 11 was done, as did Project 23. It's unavoidable. There's going to be some people that will move forward. But when I get to Project 23, they're already done. I'm moving on to Project 24. So in my opinion, this is a more prudent way to get to our commitment and be completely done when we get there.
So it's kind of just a reprioritization as you're out there. I mean, I think we understand. It's
basically taking, instead of doing a bunch of small segments, you're expanding the size of the project. And what I like about it is all those intermediate boxes and rerunning so that we can keep overhead, really that's a waste. And we're eliminating that waste. And we feel like, you know, at the end of the day, this is a lower cost, and it's a quicker way to get to the end.
Are you saying green boxes are going to go away?
No, not all of them, but a lot of unnecessary green boxes will go away.
Let's just show some examples here.
Yes. So this is Green Avenue. We went out there to try to get an illustration of what I was talking about. So you see the circled piece of equipment there? That's a switchgear. And don't worry trying to strain your eyes. I'll show you on the next slide. But my point here is this looks great. We're looking down Green Avenue. It looks pretty nice. If you could see further, about every 150 feet, there's one of those primary enclosures I'm telling you about. I was standing there taking the picture down the street. So if you can see, the picture I had was much prettier than this picture, right? That primary enclosure, that's exactly what that is that I've circled. It's a primary enclosure. Its function is only that of a joint. It's a joint between where we need to go and where we are.
From overhead to underground.
The actual, so if you look in the back.
So it would have gone away eventually, but just not as
well. Well, there's two ways to answer that. That box would never have gone away, because what would have to happen is we'd have to come back in there to make the attachment. And why would you not use the existing box? So it would not make sense to take it away. But in the design, what would happen is that's a transformer next to it right there. It would have come out of there and continued through the loop and back around to itself. But because we had to come out of this box, if you can see, there's a pole back there in the backyard. We had to come out of that box underground, go up that pole to a switch that feeds that. back. So when we were looking down Green, it looked beautiful. This is in the backyard of every house down Green. It's an overhead primary line. And you see those trees? I have an arrow pointed to a tree that's actually in the line that I since had trimmed a little bit. Those are in jeopardy. I mean, I hope that's the only way you can have a liability. And when we say we're protecting our tree canopy, I really would like to protect it by getting those lines out of there so we can let those grow healthy and nice. But we can't do it with the lines there. We have to, if you want power, there can't be trees in the line.
But that's at the back of the house.
Yes, ma'am.
So are you also saying that we're talking about undergrounding some lines that are at the back of the house, not in the front?
No, the design is to move it to the front. So they moved it to the front for Green, but don't forget there's another street on the other side, on the other side of houses. That's on another segment under the existing plan. So they're going to do that when they come back and then have to figure out a way to connect those loops, to make it a loop, because there'd be radios right now. So when this tree hits this line, it doesn't just blow the overhead line, it blows all the underground that's between there and where the overhead line is. So it's the people that just got underground and go, darn, I just got undergrounded and I'm out of power again. I thought this was more reliable.
And that's because your fusing is different between an overhead and an underground system. And when we keep these mixtures of overhead and underground on the same quarter point, it's not a good...
Let me see if I have...
So are we going to have to make the decision whether or not people are going to be required to hook up?
We're not talking about services.
Okay.
Chris and Roland?
Thank you. I just want to see if I have grasped this correctly. What you're proposing is to consolidate what the initial plan was around feeder lines so that you can take advantage of the looping and the ability to avoid leaving, you know, one street out of the equation, as you just said. So we're going to get more done in a concentrated area now than we were under the pre-existing plan.
That's exactly right. So what we're saying is we're still going to follow the priorities that were set forth in the original plan because they were well thought out, but we'll expand it to where we'll be skipping some ahead. But it's in an effort to give better reliability.
I don't want to be in the party.
You're there then. You're in like Errol Flynn. But,
do you have a question?
Well, I do just a little bit. I do understand what you're saying. But I also know that when you do that, you've got to decide where we're going to go first all the time once you get there. And the original priority was set out based on reliability, mm-hmm. and it was also a consideration of trees.
Yes, ma'am.
So the question is, I know we keep saying it was a good plan, but it sounds like to me it wasn't that good of a plan, and now this is a much better plan, and it probably is a much better plan, but my question is, how do you decide where you go first?
We're still going in the same priority as that list for the
except
for the main project.
There are huge amounts of that list that are already
done. But we're still going to work our way down that list. So after you get done, he's at 12, so you're done. But you know, when we finish 11, you know, 13 is going to start, and then the quarter point around that 13 gets done, which does bring some others forward. But then we go to 14.
Yeah, I kind of got that point. My question is, how much time are we saving and how much money are we saving by doing it this way? I mean, it makes sense. Everything you're saying makes sense to me. I'm not having a problem with that. It makes sense. But there must be that it's going to happen this much faster and it's going to cost us this much less. And that's what I'm not hearing.
Well, to answer the first question about it wasn't really a good plan. I think in hindsight it's easy to see maybe this is a better plan, but when you're starting off new, I think it set the groundwork for us to build what we're doing now.
It is important because the question is now, are the trees being considered at all?
In the rear lot, they're being ignored a little bit because remember that wasn't aesthetic and that was a small line, so it wasn't considered high on that priority level. So you can see how that would be put back. So to answer the second question, I can only look at what I'm seeing so far. I feel, and I'm going to show it in a slide, that we're going to outperform what we've done in the past, but I want to caution that depends on the level of work we're doing. So if we're doing feeder with 1,000 KCM wires, the big wire, that costs more and goes much slower than little wire. So you can't. It's not apples to apples on that. But I feel as though the efficiency... I can't sit here and give you an exact how much we're going to save or how much, but I can tell you that I'm pretty excited about knowing that I can keep a promise that was made prior to me getting here, doing this plan, and I was a little unsure if I could keep it following the same method.
We're excited about that, too.
Yeah, we are. So what year are we talking about? How many years from today are we talking about being finished? Not exaggerated, something we really think we can accomplish.
That's going to take some more effort. And like I say, this is an update. We have been, you know, wrestling with this thing, getting our arms around it as new people coming in. And the process, the continued engineering and the continued planning will continue. And I hope to, 6 months from now, come back and have this whole thing laid out with all the quarter points, knowing that we took a 75 project down to a 23 project, and we could lay that out. It's going to take a little bit more time on our part.
That's better than I would have said.
But we'll get there.
Yes, we will.
So maybe 6 months. But you just need some experience to put it together.
It would be easier to give you an honest answer that way rather than trying to say something that
anecdotal.
I would
rather be honest.
So it's always an honest answer, but maybe not always enough knowledge based on it.
Much better said.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you look at Project 11, the way it was originally designed, there's 16,700 feet of primary, and there's secondary. I'm not going to talk about the secondary as much right now. That's not as important for our measuring purposes. The six segments of 23 that we're going to pick up inside of that project equal 9,315 feet of primary, and the two segments of 55 up there on Howe Branch that we picked up are another 2,750 feet of primary. That's 28,000, you can see it, 5.45 miles of primary. Now, I want to be sure to be clear, I don't want to make you sound like I'm doing 5 miles of what we recently said. That's not what I'm saying. That 5 miles of primary equal about 2.87 roadway miles. And that's kind of the way we're going to move forward measuring it, so we can give you factual statements of how we're improving or how we're not meeting, which won't happen.
And that's one of the things when you read the article that said we didn't do our 5 miles this year. Different size lines take different amount of time, and sometimes things were measured, you know, if you put in 2 miles a feeder, but it's 1 mile a street, you know, sometimes it counted as 2 miles, sometimes it counted as 1 mile. So there's some inconsistencies in the past, so we're trying to get to a more consistent way of reporting this information to the community.
Hey guys, how much longer do we have on this?
Minute.
Okay.
So
now.
Yeah. So that after we're done with Project 11 of this design, that'll leave us with, based on information we got from our GIS expert, which is Keith Gearhart, who's been a great help, there'll be 47 roadway miles left. So I want to be careful, but you can do the calculation yourself on the question you asked previously if things worked out just the way they're going now. 2.87 miles of roadway cost us $1.2 million, basically. Again, don't think that you can say that means every 2.87 miles is going to cost 1.2, but it's a good thing to look at. And this slide is simply, you can look at it at your leisure, is each segment broke out in the cost that came up with that 1.27. That's how we got that information. It's all based on unit prices that we have. So the only reason we should come over budget a little is if there's a piece of work they have to do that's not covered in the unit, they're going to charge us time and equipment for, and that should be minimal because they have to get it approved through me before they do any of that. So basically that's what we have to present.
So I also wanted to just give a follow-up. With this Project 11, as we have it planned, and the Project 12 that's under construction now, those two projects will give us our goal of 5 miles for this year at a cost of around $2 million. So to us, you know, these are, it's a good sign, and we feel very comfortable that moving forward, we can meet the promises that have been made.
Great. Thank you. Any questions further for Dan and Troy?
If I could just add a few comments. I did attend the Utility Advisory Board meeting for this, and so I was able to give those guys some input. That's why I haven't been saying much over here. And but one of the interesting things, most of you know, I've been involved in this development of the original plan as well when I was on the utility advisory board, that they're trying a new way. They're doing two projects. They're paying attention to everything. And so moving forward, we should have a good grasp of, you know, what it's going to take to get this thing done financially as well as schedule-wise. And so some of that schedule we may be able to control by giving more money. Some we may not be able to. So it's almost like at the end of 6 months, what I'm looking for is us to revisit the overall undergrounding plan, and then we'll have good numbers. We can speak from facts, and we'll have an experienced crew and see where we are at that point in time and the best go-forward strategy.
Sounds good to me. Great.
Will you put your view graphs in our Dropbox? Presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate it. Commission, we'll continue to push through if you're good with that. We have the minutes. We'll look for an approval of the minutes. Okay, great. We'll open the floor. Any discussion or anybody wishing to address the commission on the consent agenda, which is solely made up of the minutes of last meeting? See, then we'll close the floor. You all ready to vote? Great. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Item 11. Randy, is this you?
Yes, sir. Just looking for a commission representative to the selection of the architect for the library/event center.
Would you give me a favor? Would you please tell us to share with the commission and the public who is currently on the...
Sure.
And the commitment of time and so we have some understanding of what we're talking about.
All right. So who is currently on is Brenda Moody, Troy Attaway, Chris Dinger, myself, Sean Schaefer, and the library has appointed Dan McIntosh as their board member representative. So we're looking for a city commission representative that I think should make that up to 7 people.
Isn't Sean the representative of the library?
Sean is the staff representative, yes.
So we have 2 library representatives.
Right. And 5 city representatives.
This is just a little bit different, but I would like for us to consider putting Michael Poole on the committee so that when we're finished, we've got something that we're all signed up to, we're all happy with. I don't know if that's something anybody else would consider, but he seems very reasonable about these discussions.
I'd be more interested in having one of the commission members like we did with Tom was on the selection before, and that one of the commission members is basically monitoring the process. That's kind of how I feel about it.
I was uncomfortable that there were 2 people from the library. It just seemed like it would be a good person in there to kind of make sure that every move forward, everybody's happy. But I'm good with that. In fact, I would love to nominate.
I would suggest that Michael can have more comments from not being involved in the process.
That is always true. I'd love to nominate Commissioner Grant.
I think that if we're going to nominate somebody that's not part of this commission, I would like to see an architect. If we're choosing an architect, I'd like to see an architect if we're going to go off outside of the commission.
Okay, you're talking about additional to someone from the commission.
Yes, yeah, so okay. We need
we still need someone from the commission.
Right.
So why don't we take care of that?
Well, before we do that, I would like a comment from Randy about the time. Super asked for time.
I would like to understand.
I see 2 meetings.
Yeah, obviously you'll get your proposals. Depending on how many there are, really dictates how much time it is. If you get 20 proposals, it takes a lot more time to read than 3 or 4. So I can't really comment on that part of it. But then, you know, you have the meeting on May the 12th, which is the... you got a meeting in there somewhere where you rank the proposals. Rank the proposals and then decide who you're going to hear oral presentations from. And then you'll have the oral presentations from probably 3 or so architects on the 12th.
Okay.
And then that'll go to the commission, so your work will be done at that point.
So they bring the recommendation back to us, and we vote on it like any other RFQ.
That's correct.
Okay.
I'd nominate Commissioner Weldon.
Do we want to see if we can get in? Do we need a second?
I'll second, Pete.
Yeah, if I could just speak to this, the odds are I'll be conflicted out because we'll all have some site engineers on there.
Well, I was thinking myself that I've got...
I'll withdraw.
Yeah.
I've done business with several architects in town and I may or may, who may or may not be bidding on this. I don't know if that conflicts me or not.
No, do you make profit off them? You personally, can you profit from their company? I can profit from these companies, so that's why I'm
right. Prospectively.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Can I say that properly?
Yeah. So in the past, it's not the issue going forward.
Okay.
That's so, one of the first things you're going to read.
We have Commissioner Weldon.
I live to serve.
No? Okay. Let's vote on that. Do I need to open this up, Mr. City Attorney?
You're welcome to do that if you like, Mayor.
I don't think we need to be quite honest.
Administrative.
Great. I just wanted to see if it was necessary since it was under action item. So let's call the roll. And actually, if I think we could do this just by... Yeah? Great. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you. Now,
see, real quick, this will ultimately come to us for final approval.
Yes,
that's correct.
This is just preliminary.
Right.
Secondarily, do you think it's worthwhile putting, I know we have Chris Stenger, who's an architect on the RFQ team, RFP team. Do you guys think it's necessary to put in a representative from the public also as an architect? I'm open to yay or nay. You know, I just thought when I was looking at it, I thought it might be.
What are the skill sets of the people from the city who are on this right now?
Randy, we still haven't figured out.
Yeah, there's no skill there. Because we have, Brenda Moody, who'll obviously be looking at from the event center side, and then we have Corey Attaway, who, you know, look at it from building and construction side. Chris Stinger is an architect, works for our building department, and then. Of course, Sean Schaefer with the library expertise. Now, keep in mind, we're not evaluating any designs. We're just evaluating architects who have done this type of work.
Right.
So, and then Dan McIntosh, of course, is an attorney that does a lot of construction type. You know, they do a lot of development type work.
Okay.
I have no problem with not having another architect, but I also have no problem having another architect.
Mr.
Cooper? No problem, thank you.
Okay.
Do you guys think we'll be finding an architect that wants to be involved on this?
That's right. That's the problem.
One that we would. Yeah, I'm okay if we leave it with the seven as it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm happy to do that too. We have next up. We have our public hearing. Mr.
Arneman? Yes, sir. Resolution number 2173-16, a resolution of the City Commission of the City of Winter Park, Florida, supplementing ordinance number 3031-16, authorizing the issuance in an aggregate principal amount of not to exceed $21 million electric refunding revenue bonds, series 2016 of the city, for the purpose of refunding a portion of the city's outstanding electric refunding and improvement revenue bonds, series 2007, and to pay the cost thereof, providing for the payment of such bonds from the net revenues derived from the electric system of the city, authorizing the awarding of said bonds pursuant to a public bid, delegating certain authority for the award of the bonds, and the approval of the terms and details of said bonds, authorizing the publication of the notice of sale for the bonds or a summary thereof, appointing the paying agent and bond registrar for said bonds, authorizing the distribution of a preliminary official statement and the execution and delivery of an official statement with respect to such bonds, authorizing the execution and delivery of an escrow deposit agreement and the appointment of an escrow agent thereto, authorizing the city's financial advisor to structure and solicit bids to purchase federal securities to be deposited into the escrow fund created under the escrow deposit agreement, authorizing the execution and delivery of a continuing disclosure certificate, authorizing the appointment of a verification agent in connection with the refunding of the Series 2007 bonds, making certain other covenants and agreements in connection therewith, and providing for an effective date.
Well done.
Wow. You're in good shape.
Don, would you give us the notes on that later, please? Randy, is this you?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, you've already done the ordinance authorizing the bonds. This just sets forth the parameters to move it on forward. So,
any questions for the city manager? Seeing none, we'll look for a motion.
Yeah, I could. Commission, there's one typographical error on page 2 under the definition of escrow deposit agreement. It references Exhibit C. That should be Exhibit D as in Delta.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Great. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion with the commission on it? No. Seeing none, we'll open the floor to public comment. Anybody wish to address the commission on this item? We'll close the floor to public comment. You're ready to vote?
Yes, sir.
Cindy, would you please read the roll?
Commissioner Seidel?
Yes.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner Weldon?
Yes.
Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. Okay. Commission reports. Mr. Seidel?
Pete's first vote. Congratulations. Thank you so much. Welcome aboard. Thank you, Rick. A couple of items that I had wanted to talk about. First of all, I went to the Easter service mass at the Ruby Ball Amphitheater and was actually able to welcome the folks to that. And after the first song, I told people if I wasn't up before, I'm awake now and I'm ready to go. So it was a very joyous occasion. So I just wanted to share that with everyone. If you have a chance to do it some Easter sunrise morning, you should do so. I have mentioned before, Mr. Mayor, about trying to get some kind of word out prior to the commission meetings of where we are with things and what we're thinking about things. And we had talked about doing emails that we could put out on a Friday, that there was an example being done. Randy and I met with one lady from the Sunshine Laws, and she actually proposed this as a way we could communicate to each other, where all the emails would be sent to Randy, and then Randy would send them all out at 5 o'clock on a Friday. And so that, if you wanted to say something about the position, you could. If you didn't, you didn't have to. But a lot of that is, I come into these meetings, and quite honestly, I have no idea what y'all are going to say and where you stand on
things.
Is it
weird?
Right. And so I was trying to figure out a way without the continuous workshop schedule, because some of us have day jobs, and so it's convenient we can look at it, send out the email to folks. But that was something I'd like the commission to consider, just from a communication perspective. And for just as an example, some of the things about the library today that I brought up, I could have spelled out my reasoning, my thought process, and then you guys could have a chance to think about it, as opposed to right now I'm saying it, you guys have to think right then and there how you feel about it, because you shouldn't have heard it before, right?
No, you can't have heard it before.
Right. So that was an area I was hoping we could try to figure something out.
So my concern about that is that okay to do with the Sunshine Law?
That's the city attorney.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
Mayor, Commissioner, yes, one-way street is fine. The problem that you get into is the response back to that commissioner. So
right.
if you send an email on Friday, all commissioners may all send an email to Randy. Randy distributes that to everybody. And then there's a response back to the commissioners. So Greg sends something and gets to Randy. Randy, and then it goes to Sarah, and they send a response back that comes back. Now you've got that discussion or meeting. So as long as you don't respond to that and there's no intermediary between you, you're fine.
Which, again, so you're able to do that currently. The reason we don't primarily ever do that is because that then forces the other person to just be the recipient and not be able to respond. Because sometimes you do want to respond. You want to say, what are you thinking? Here's what I'm thinking of it. And then that's when you cross the line. So it rarely ever happens. If someone has an issue they want to bring up, we do occasionally get an email, but...
Well, I kind of looked at it from a perspective of, we have property owners wanting to come in and get lot splits, or they have property owners coming in for development reasons, that they would kind of know ahead of time, well, the commission's that everyone's for it, and it's a 5-0 vote, everyone thinks it's a good idea. So, but if it's not right, I try and reach out to people and talk to them if I don't agree with what they're doing beforehand, so I can kind of let them know. But it's, I really don't know where the rest of y'all stand on things, and I'm trying to... unless we do a workshop and talk about the agenda first and then come back later, which,
unfortunately, the way the statute's set up.
Right. I hear you completely. I've been thinking about this, on P&Z in terms of, on P&Z as well, in terms of going back and forth. And it's a dilemma because
if you start doing one-way streets and some people do it for political purposes instead of information purposes, and all of a sudden everybody's getting bombarded with phone calls and emails because, you know, yeah, and I just rather we have good, honest, open discussions here.
Okay.
That's my
challenge.
And I think we would be really treading if we did it that way. I would rather, when I first came on the commission and I went to the training, it was really clear what they said to us. They said, do not comment to your fellow commissioners. It wasn't, the League of Cities wasn't even a halfway place on it. They said, do not do that. It was very clear. So I don't know, it makes me think that we're dipping into some really interesting ground, and I don't want to do that.
The problem with it is it sets you up for a potential violation. So some governments actually, local governments actually do those submissions out, but now if you as a commissioner have received that and you respond to it,
yeah,
back to that commissioner, you automatically created a violation under the law for both of the commissioners that have responded, even if the first sending commissioner had no intent to expect some kind of response. So the better, more conservative protection is not to do it, but going one way is not prohibited.
And Commissioner, I would offer this too. Last year I offered, and I met with three commissioners, regarding their priorities for the budget season. I think it actually helped. We got through the budget season. We knew what each other's priorities were. We were very public with it. But still people, you know, we had opportunists in the media who took a shot at us for that. But if you care to have someone's opinion, just schedule it, notice it, and do what you have to do. Other jurisdictions do it. Orlando does it all the time. It's funny, in the same article that they were criticizing me for having these meetings, there's an article supporting the Orlando City Council for having these meetings separately to discuss budget items. So, you know, you're going to get jumped whether you like it or not, but if you want to have a separate meeting, we're sure we can do it.
We get emails all the time that come to all of us on a decision, or not a decision, but someone's issue, and they're in commissioners, and we typically don't respond.
Right.
we may respond to Randy, but that's it.
Okay.
No, I just want to bring that up. The other item that I didn't want us to lose sight on, now that it's the end of my first year, Pete's in his first year, was I had mentioned about the transportation board, and I guess my question would be why wait on something like that, where, you know, with traffic being an issue, is there any reason we can't adjust boards mid season, if you will?
Like, the charter allows for once a year. And I think you'll see that, Randy, correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think the charter gives me a date to appoint.
Well, there's two things. The ordinance, where we revamped all the boards, set for a sunsetting of all the boards, and that happens this year. Over the next couple of meetings, staff is hoping to bring to the commission some suggestions on board restructuring, one of which would be to discuss a transportation board.
Can you define this year?
April
is the end of the...
You'll be seeing some adjustments possibly forward.
The reappointment.
Well, that's fast.
Yeah, the reappointment's fast.
March 28th.
What are we working on?
Yeah. So I'm hoping to have it ready for this next meeting, but if we don't get it ready, it'll be the second meeting in April. But the appointments, the reappointments typically start in May.
Okay. And so then the other kind of follow-up to that is, now that the deal is going through in 6 weeks on the property where the bowling alley is, what can we be doing to try and get some accelerated improvements at that intersection with the DOT? Is that something that we can, because if we have the property, there's no reason to hold off trying to do something, and so get an evaluation of what can be done, and then is it worth it to get done, and how does that happen?
I guess. If that's the direction of the commission, I'd be glad to start working on that.
Do you need three nods?
Yes, sir.
I think that's...
Have there been three nods to present a plan that justifies the use of that space as park?
No.
No. Okay.
But there was budget to do a master plan for that overall park, which can take that into consideration.
What's the schedule on that?
I
don't know that we've actually...
Yeah, we haven't put it out to bid yet to even start...
When is that closing?
I can send you the exact date, but it's within the next, I think probably the next 4 or 5 weeks.
I just hesitate to represent something that we don't actually own yet. Yeah. I would rather wait till we actually focus on it. It's just maybe something I learned.
Well, I'm comfortable moving forward with just a plan for that, for the turn lane. That's okay. The reason we did a goal.
I think we're there.
I mean, I got to get a piece of it. I'm not there yet.
Correct. I mean, at a minimum, the city's going to take it right away from that property, correct?
Right.
Yes.
So
we all agree with that.
So I don't know how much work's involved in in defining what that right away is going to be before we close on the property, but it would seem to be a modest amount of work. Mm-hmm. Troy.
Hey, Mr. Sedet.
That's all I had, and I appreciate it.
Sure. Vice Mayor Sprinkle.
Well, congratulations on making it 1 year, and congratulations on joining us. And Carolyn, congratulations to you also.
Yes.
And so I'm very glad to be up here with you guys. I have about 5 things. First of all, we had the Easter egg hunt, and everybody and their dog and cat were there. It was very, very, very large, and there were lots and lots of people, and lots of kids with many, many eggs. So it was always fun. It's a good event, and I enjoy going there. I just have to clarify, because I get this question, and I must be a slow learner here. You can have, we have a noise ordinance about when you can construct from, is it 7 to 7 or 7 to 9? Is it Monday through Saturday or Monday through Sunday?
I don't remember it off the top of my head. George is still in there. Probably does.
Would you clarify that? Because I have had this happen to me this week, like with 3 people, and I just need to get it right.
Okay. Noise-generated construction is allowed from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday, according to our noise ordinance.
Okay.
And not on Sundays or holidays. The holidays are listed in the ordinance.
Okay.
Now, that does not mean that somebody can't visit the site or do painting or something that does not generate noise.
How about lawn care? Is that considered?
Well, that's...
The blower, and is it a big deal?
That's a separate
issue. Does it also have hours for lawn care?
There are... I don't have them memorized, but there's a whole list of specific prohibitions in the noise ordinance.
Okay.
And, you know, one of them relates to construction, one relates to domestic tools and things like that. I think it's limited to after 9 a.m. on Sundays or and holidays, things like that.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. So the other thing that came to us, this is just the picky stuff that happens, but it's just something I'm going to bring up because all of you got the same emails I did, and that was the phone books. Okay? So Jack Miles didn't like it that we were letting phone books get delivered in town. Do we have any choice in that? We don't get to control the fact that somebody wants to make money and we're going to recycle phone books, right?
Right. We do recycle.
We do recycle them, so that is not something that we can pass an ordinance against, because that's a free enterprise still in this community, right? And I appreciated Mary Daniels talking about what we talked about with the MLK Park. It has always been something I've brought up whenever something's come in front of us, and I know that I'm not by myself there.
I do want to point out that the City Commission has never approved that plan. I don't know that it's been presented to the City Commission.
It has not.
It hasn't.
I understand that, but I also know that there's an understanding by certain people. So whether or not it's real doesn't matter. We still need to address it.
Yes.
And so at some point we need to address that, because there are people that believe that we have, and maybe it had not. The other thing that we talked about just briefly was about, I heard Greg say something about having a day job. I think if we can keep what's happening here with our 3:30 time frame, that's really important, because that does start to interfere the more 2 o'clock meetings you have and things like that. So it seems like we're doing a really good job of getting through our agenda, and you all are doing a great job of placing the things that take more time in the timely places. So anytime you can do that. But Randy also knows that I already talked to him about what are we going to do, because when I joined the commission, We had an all-day planning session about where we're going to be in 5 years or 10 years, and I know that what you told me was really good for me to hear. So would you tell everybody, or maybe you have, what the plan is?
What I suggested to the commissioner is that it would be appropriate. Strategic planning. It'd be appropriate that once the visioning process is over, perhaps to have our next strategic planning session, so the five commissioners can, you know, with that visioning in mind, and before we start the comp plan, is to really decide what we want to, you know, what we want to do next.
And my only other issue there is I know that summer's coming, and all of us probably have plans, so I'd just like us to get that date scheduled as soon as we can. Thanks, that's all I have.
It's been all over. We've done it in January. We've done it a lot of different.
It areas. Does make sense to wait until after the vision. So I'm not uncomfortable with that. One of the things that came up while I was campaigning, and it comes up every year, and that's the time that we have the city meetings, like your discussion about day jobs. There are a lot of people that would love to see the commission meeting later in the day, and I don't know what later in the day means. I know the first 30 minutes is not the meat of the matter, but I don't know. it's great. There are opportunities, however. but I would think that maybe there is some consideration that could be given. I don't know if any of you have thought about it and rejected the idea, or if it would be possible for us to start our meetings more at 5 o'clock or in the evening. It used to go so late that I could understand that kind of a problem, but I don't know now. And I don't know how we talk. I don't know how we as a group talk about that. But I would love to hear from other people, because many people say they can't get to our meetings. And now whether they would come, if they could, who knows? But it is certainly a real excuse for not coming.
How long are the videos up?
How long are the what?
How long are the videos of the meetings up and available on the website?
A year?
A couple years.
2 years.
2 years?
The videos and the audios, right?
Right.
I don't think there's a perfect time to do it. I think staff is also here, too. And if we start having it at 5,
staff here.
Let's go to 9 or 8, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 at night.
You can see that there are fellow communities that start the meetings at 7. You know, they're criticized on the other end.
Yeah.
You know, the meeting's now at 10:30, 11 o'clock. I can't stay up that late. I got children.
The 7 would be really tight.
I'm sensitive to it. I just don't know if there's a perfect time to be honest.
If you do it at 5, everybody says, well, now I don't have a chance to have dinner. I mean, right. It's just, it doesn't matter what you do. It makes it a challenge for someone. No. You know, Orange County starts their meetings at 9 in the morning and run them all day long.
Well, it's not uncomfortable for me. I just thought I would bring it up as a topic to see how you felt about it. And the second thing was the water quality. You know, we used to send out that report. It's just real sensitive right now. I don't know, did it go out recently, a water quality report?
Yeah, the lake water or the water?
No, the drinking water. We've done that before. I'm just thinking that there's a lot of question now. There are a lot of people concerned. There are a lot of people concerned about standing. Here are the things I heard about standing water. People are very concerned about standing water at construction sites, the swimming pools, and people are concerned about what's being put in our water, the quality of our water. And I know that's good news, David, but I also know in the past I have received something in my home that gave me that report. Seems a long time ago. And it wasn't the lake water, it was our drinking water.
Yeah.
We still do that annually, and we have, in the last 2 years, the regulatory agencies have allowed us to do it electronically so we can post it. We still deliver it to people that are in large multifamily areas, but it is posted.
When did we do that last? Do you remember?
I think it was a couple of months ago when the last one went out.
So pretty recently.
Yes.
And it's on the website?
It is. Okay. Yes, we put it on the city website.
That'd be great. And is it one of those tabs on that front page?
It is. I don't know if it stays there, but when it comes out, it is. And I can certainly send you the link.
They are very sensitive about water. They're very sensitive between.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good report.
Yeah, right.
But I'd be happy to send you that link so you can get straight to it.
Okay. Is Clarissa, is that even possible, that's a link on the perfect.
Is that the new one? We'll come down there.
Okay. Is that month from now? Months from now?
You just said June.
Okay.
I think
that's not all right. Thank you. That's it. Thank you.
Mr. Weldon.
Yes, I do have a couple things. The first thing is I would like to see if I can get agreement to bring back the historic district ordinance with some changes. I have four recommended changes to the ordinance along with a series of recommendations for the Historic Preservation Board to consider issues, and I'll pass these out.
I think the motion would be to bring it back for discussion, which you can okay. certainly do. I don't think that it's opportunity to discuss the items themselves.
Right.
I think we'll bring it back with these. You know what I mean? We can have one. We can have two on that. You need three. But as far as going into the depth of the changes, I don't think we can bring it back with these changes assigned to it.
Okay.
Randy, am I correct on that?
Well, that's up to the will of the commission. If you wanted to say, if you wanted it to come back with these specific changes, you haven't had time to look at them tonight. But we could have the attorney prepare an ordinance with those changes
for discussion.
But if you're going to have a discussion of just what he's handed out here, I can put that behind the title sheet, and that his document can be your discussion item next time.
See, now Pete could email this Friday.
I don't think it did.
And you could.
How do you feel about that? I'm just asking of the commission, do you want this to come back for discussion, to have a discussion on these items, or do you
could
want
to... Could we wait 12 months?
Yeah.
I'd rather not.
Oh, no,
yeah.
You're not.
Well, I did notice that it includes some incentives, which is something that we are waiting for right now to come from the Historic Preservation Board. So I think that this should probably be referred to the Historic Preservation Board for their consideration, not for direction, but as they are considering the incentives, that they also consider.
Well, I would rather not do that because we spent over a year debating the historic preservation law, and I think the issues are clear, and I would like to see the commission, if I can get three or four or five votes perhaps, Carolyn, to consider rewriting four very critical elements of the ordinance that deal with whether or not we are going to allow voluntary participation in historic districts, and at the same time find ways as a city to encourage and reward those who adopt the values of historic preservation and are willing to commit their properties to that regulatory oversight. I think that's the issue. It's always been the issue. I'd like to make it the issue, and I'd like to bring it back to the commission for consideration to change the ordinance.
I just think that in the past, when someone wanted to bring something back, you got three nods and it came back, and then we discussed it when it came back. So as opposed to us setting this up for discussion, I'd like for us to set it up as the way it is, and then when it comes back to us, then we have that open discussion up here.
So either way it is, what do you mean? So I think what Commissioner Sprinkle is saying is if we have this re-agendized for next agenda to discuss this, we have this, so we can take this home and do a little homework.
Right.
But as far as just bringing it up as a discussion, then at the next commission meeting, we can discuss this, and if we agree to these changes, then we can set that. Or some other changes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy to give you the support to have this discussed, but not at the commission. Any changes made yet?
Okay, two.
Yeah. And I am also.
So you have three there.
No.
Okay. Commissioner Sada.
You can't wait 12 months.
I'd like to have the Historic Preservation Board.
Mr. Mayor, all kidding aside, I mean, this is, this has been going on for a long time. And so, to bring up the discussions again, my personal opinion is we have a lot more other issues to address. Have we had a historic neighborhood become a neighborhood since we passed an ordinance?
We have not.
Have we had any applications? How many houses have been put on the historic preservation list since we passed the ordinance?
Six.
Okay.
Five, six?
So that's why I don't want to go through it again. That's my personal reason. If y'all want to go through it again, I'm happy to go through it again. But
I appreciate your point of view. I would just point out that
the opportunity here is to decide upon what is real historic preservation and what is an attempt to control neighborhood redevelopment. And I'm not saying that I'm not interested in talking about other ways to address neighborhood redevelopment, but I am obviously known to be serious about what we consider to be historic. And I think there are some ways that that we should give a try to voluntary as a way to embrace and encourage it, and I think we might actually get more. I agree that you haven't seen anything under the existing ordinance. I suspect that you won't see any, frankly.
Mr. Weldon, what I would like to see is what you and I rode around in my car for a couple hours that day. Give me something first to help protect the character of the neighborhoods, and then I'm cool with all this. I said that during the whole thing. We need to do something to protect the character of the neighborhoods, and this was the only tool that I had. So if you guys can bring something forward,
guys, do that.
I want to have a discussion.
We can have a discussion. I'm fine to have a discussion. Let's agenda the discussion. We're having a discussion in too great detail. I think that there are probably people who are interested in hearing this. So let's. You've got three nods.
Good.
We'll have that for the next meeting.
Good.
Anything else?
Yes, there was one other thing.
The three nods were?
Commissioner Sprinkle, myself, and Mr.
Bowman.
There was one other thing I'm interested in.
Mr. Sidell,
I'm happy to discuss.
I do not want to open up the historic preservation. Okay. So I feel there's a lot more urgent items for us to address.
I hear you.
The other issue I wanted to bring up is strategic thinking with regard to property acquisition and divestiture. There are a lot of things we can talk about on the 11th on this issue as we talk about the library property, I think. But I want to bring up another candidate to see if the commission might have an interest in thinking about it and perhaps discussing it at the next meeting as well. And that is, I believe that the four lots that are on the City Hall block that are not owned by the City of Winter Park are strategic properties for the city. And I would like to see if there's a way that the city can acquire those properties. And I would like to discuss that issue. And if...
I actually think we should discuss all of the city property when we talk about this, that we can't just take one here and one there, that when we talk on the 11th, we need to look at all the properties. Even though we may not have any reason to look in depth at most of them, but I do think that, and my understanding was that we had already looked at those properties over here. Randy, help me out.
We do have that on the list of strategic properties we'd like to acquire someday.
Okay.
But I mean, we haven't.
Yeah.
And we made an attempt to come up with a deal a year ago or so, I think.
Right.
And we're not able to do so. It is our understanding.
So you stopped now?
Yeah, they haven't been actively doing it, so but we do have the Blake Yard, we do have the former Swoop site, we have Progress Point, of course, that has got to come back.
Of course, the post office property.
But I think we don't own the post office property.
There's also, we have acquisition, and he was also talking about getting rid of it. And maybe others that you see, like the post office that you want to acquire someday.
Yeah.
We do have to talk about that because, as this was brought up, EDC, they also were talking about how we do go through the disposal process. We have the, I wish I knew the address, but the address of the property on Lee Road, the former, yes.
The commercial property.
The commercial property close to I-4.
Which is next to where.
And I'm not sure if we've gone through the process of, I think we were looking at possibly having a bid process to have a couple of brokers. So are we moving forward with that process?
We haven't actively done that. No.
Okay. But I think that's a good discussion to have regarding the acquisition and disposition of properties to the city. So I'm happy to have that discussion. I don't know if that's a next time, if that's a work session. It sounds like if we do, Mr. Welland's point, there's four properties here. That's, that could be a half-hour discussion just in and of itself.
I'm happy to talk about it.
I'm sorry?
I'm happy to talk about it.
I thought that property on Lee Road was represented in this CAFR as a trade.
It's an investment.
An investment, yeah.
Because we're planning on selling it.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I didn't know that you would put it in a separate place because of that, but it looked like it was.
As opposed to being a fixed asset that you hold on to.
Okay.
Well, do you want to make that part of the next meeting? I mean, I think that's, again, a larger discussion. I don't... Randy, can you bring us something to the next meeting?
Yes,
sir. Just frame the discussion, and if we see that we need a larger discussion, we can have a workshop on it?
Yes, sir.
Do I have three, too?
We have all that done.
Do I have three on at least?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, Randy, I think you have three on that.
Thank you.
Is that okay, Mr. Walden?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I just have a couple things. One, actually, I had that property on Lee Road to discuss, so I'm glad you brought that up. Clarissa, are we doing anything actively to secure emails? If we hear from people, and Commissioner Cooper mentioned it before, that possibly people can't get here, are we actively marketing to secure residents' emails so that we can keep them up to date on what's going on in the city?
That's a great idea. We do market our city news, where if they want to subscribe to receive certain information, but we can, in our communication tools, our inserts, and also our update, ask them to submit their emails via a form that we can create, and then to use those for specific purposes.
For anything. I just think we need to build a city database for the city as we, when items come up, Commissioner Seidel was just talking about different items coming up. If we want to reach out to the public and either get their feedback or approach them to tell them of opportunities, email is the cheapest and quickest. So.
No, absolutely. And that's where our city news, because we have like 10 or 11 different categories, because we don't want to just send them information that they're not interested in.
I just think everything that goes out from the city should have an acquisition aspect to it, so we should be trying to acquire those emails.
Okay.
Well, is that kind of a government list, though, of emails?
Yeah, they would all be public record, correct?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, for those that don't want to be on the list. Just
they don't have to be on the list.
If they send it, they should request to be on the list. It shouldn't, like, if they send an email to the city, we shouldn't automatically put them on the list.
No, we don't.
No. If I understand it correctly, Mayor, you're asking for us to solicit if they would like to voluntarily provide their email to the city to receive city information. Then they could provide that to us, and then we can compile those.
I'm just looking to try to get more information to people if they want it.
Just make sure they understand so that it's public record.
Correct, yes.
Randy, workforce housing, do we have a plan coming forward with that?
I'll have to get you an update on that.
Can we get an update on that? And hopefully...
We'll get you an update.
Okay.
And we'll be getting the update of the affordable housing plan that you put together at the same time. Because we actually have an affordable housing plan that shows the affordable housing within 2.5 miles of Winter Park.
Just as a friendly reminder, we have a comp plan due this year. The workforce housing element and the affordable housing element will all be in that comp plan, and you will see that before the end of the year. When we talked about workforce last time, one of the things we mentioned was looking for assistance in looking at workforce housing policies that the commission may want to go forward with. So, and we did not receive direction on that, but we can have that conversation at the next meeting. What types of policies you want, or where you want us to go look for those types of policies. But this year, you will be updating the comp plan. The housing element will have both workforce and affordable housing updates in it, and we're working on that now.
Well, I would like to have that discussion personally.
Yeah, so we can, and we'll bring it on the agenda for the next
meeting. That'd be great. And the final, I wanted to say it was a real honor and pleasure to work with Commissioner McMackin for 5 years. Commissioner Weldon, you said it perfectly. He's a class act, and welcome to the commission.
Thank you.
Tom was a great guy. Tom is a great guy. And although he and I didn't always see eye to eye on things, I always respected the respect he brought to the seat, and he will be missed. And so welcome to the commission. Commissioner Cooper, congratulations on your win. A quick thank you to Ms. Mischewski for putting herself out there. But with that, folks, the process is over. Thank you all very much.